Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
20 federal.
Swamalas.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shekels.
Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor Global, where we are talking about winners at war. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to talk about week six. I'm pretty sure it's week six. I keep getting confused about this, but it was an insane episode. I think maybe one of the best episodes ever, although I say that every week. I might be too hyped up. Winners at war is literally, maybe not literally, but a lot of the good that is left in the world, and we must hold on to it at all costs. So to talk about this and maybe channel my enthusiasm, hopefully, I have a great guest, someone I love to talk about Survivor with, someone who is a great super fan, a great strategist, and has such a good mind for the game. Please welcome Survivor South Africa's great Jacques Burger. Jacques, thank you so much for being here.
Shannon, thank you so much. That's a great introduction. The previous time we spoke, we had a very dramatic episode, the one with the Jamal Jack moment. Now we have a very vanilla, mundane, standard run-of-the-mill episodes. I don't think there's a lot that we have to get down to this episode, so I don't think this is going to be a long podcast.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was just two tribal councils with some of the biggest legends of all time, including a move that'll go down in Survivor history as, if not one of the best, which I think it is, definitely one of the biggest. I watched it with my friend, got in the car afterwards and was like to her, was that the best Survivor episode of all time? And she was like, no. I was like, I kind of feel like it was, but I get so hyped up after the episode. It's like, it was up there for me. I loved it.
Yeah, I know. It was, we've got a lot of things happening, a lot of firsts, a lot of epic moments. Can't wait to discuss all of this with you in detail.
Yes, it's amazing. But Jacques, before we get into it, you know, the world is going on around it somehow. Didn't get told that the stuff should not be happening during Survivor Winners at War, let alone at all. So how are you going otherwise?
I'm good. Yeah, it's obviously you're referring to this this time where, you know, it's almost like global lockdown. I think it's something we've never seen before. I work in the supply chain industry, and you know, we've got our hands full just trying to get, you know, stock on the shelf. So it's just flat out something we've never seen before, and every time this happens, you know, I don't think the world, you know, it's like a movie. You don't think it's going to happen to you, but when you're in the situation, like, whoa, this is quite insane and quite daunting and scary. So, yeah, I think a lot of people at home in isolation are going to listen to this podcast. So the pressure is on you, Shannon, and me to a less extent to give us something to listen to while they're sitting at home.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because for me personally, like, I didn't have a good day. Australia's going into lockdown. Don't know when I get to see my family again. The footy was cancelled. It was just like thing after thing today, you know, and I know that every day is a lot of changes, but today, especially for Australia, I think personally and nationally, felt like a lot. We were probably a few days after a lot of the listeners who were in America in terms of where we're at with it. And it sucked. Like, today was a really bad day. And but I was listening to Know It Alls and I laughed out loud at something Rob or Steven said, probably both of them. And I was like, okay, this is the thing. Like,
yeah.
What we're trying to do is have some fun, be distracted and distract others and give them maybe a slight reprieve from thinking and talking about this thing that we're currently talking about. But we will stop talking about and talk about Survivor. And just if we make someone smile or laugh out loud, like that's what I said on the Australian Survivor podcast, like that's the point. Because I think that it would be fair to say that an unprecedented number of our listeners have had a bad day today. You know, like raise your hand if you've had a bad day. I feel like it'll be like the Mean Girls meme. It's like, who's been, you know, victimized by Regina George. That's what the world is Regina George right now. And it was a bad day for probably a lot of us. And I hope that we can bring a little bit of joy, talk about such a great season, my highlight of the week, something that is so good in a bleak week, a bleak world. And I hope that we can bring that to the listeners.
Yeah, definitely. I want to touch on something as we slide into the Survivor, into this podcast. You spoke about the know-it-alls. Just a disclaimer, I usually listen to you know, everything that Rob and Cope puts out. This week, I did not. So if I'm saying I do that on purpose, so I don't, you know, come and contaminate it or have a biased opinion. So whatever I'm saying, it's novel. It's my opinion. And if somebody else covered that, I apologize beforehand, but at the same time, you know, you're getting 100% of what I'm feeling and about my takes on this great episode.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's your opinions which we want to get to, and I only got to listen to Know It All so far this week, and there was a lot of great points raised, but there's so much to talk about this week as well. So
yeah,
before we get into Denise's move, which I feel like is obviously the headline, there's a couple of more, you know, overarching things I wanted to talk about from this episode, and the first is that Jess started both tribal councils nailing down what are the themes of the season. And the two things we got from Kim, it's the lions versus the hyenas, it's the threats versus the non-threats. And we got from, I think it was Wendell, we got from the Sele tribe that it's about these pre-existing relationships. And I was like, that's pretty accurate. Like, I feel like as a viewer, for me, that is coming across as the themes.
Shannon, you are quite a visionary. I made a note here that I said, I don't know if this has been raised before, but I want to point out exactly what you're saying, the different attitudes that these tribes have with regards to that first question that Jeff asked. And I don't know if you remember your chat with Veru when he spoke about Survivor South Africa, and he mentioned something that every tribe has a culture. And at some point in time, after swap and emerge, one culture starts to you know, become the, you know, it cannibalizes the other cultures. And it's so very true where in this quote unquote big players tribe with Tony and Sand, whatever, their whole mantra is, we got to get rid of the small players and let the big players stay together. And on the other side with Wendell and Wendell and Michelle and Poverty, we've got the how does previous relationship impact the game? And I think that's obviously at some point in time, it's going to fuse when it's emerged in terms of what becomes the bigger narrative. But it's a very good point, and I think one we definitely have to discuss in detail.
Yeah, I do wonder what we'll look back on, which was like the overarching narrative, because I've seen so much of both of those things separately, as you're saying. And at a point, it's one of them is going to become like the dominant theme, I think, when we look back at the season, more than just like all winners. It's true, like in terms of the culture for Dakal, for example, where it's lions versus hyenas, it's not just that's like maybe one of the most threatening tribes of all time. Like, look at the players on that tribe. But it's also that, like, you've got Jeremy, whose whole strategy was meat shields. You've got Tony, who pioneered taking a shield way too far in the game, more than most people would do when he took Spencer to the final four. So this is the kind of tribe that has players who play with big dogs, who use that as a shielded strategy. And that's obviously driven the culture. And, you know, in the other tribe, you've got like a couple who literally dated. So that's going to drive the culture too. So it's really interesting, but I'm enjoying that both of those themes really reward the long-term fan, because you have to kind of understand these dynamics from outside the game, even to maybe more than the show is showing you, if it's these external relationships. So we get that out of that. And then also, you kind of have to understand, well, why is Denise not a threat? What kind of game did she play? You've got to remember Survivor Philippines. Why is Jeremy more of a threat? What are his games like? So beyond just lions and hyenas for how they're playing in the last six episodes, it actually has been based on reputation. So we have got so much context for this, and it makes those themes even richer.
Yes, and I think we should actually commend CBS and the production team of US Survivor. Most of the time when they make a season, they try to keep in isolation, you know, like what you only see what's happening within that season, but it's almost like they've broken the fourth wall in this season of saying, yeah, you know, these guys know each other. You know, in the pilot, we saw the episode of that segment of the poker alliance, you know, they're really leaning into this Michelle Wendell thing. I think a bit more for the drama than it is for you know, giving us the perspective. But at the same time, we get that kind of sense of, yes, this is the current state of a game. All these players know each other. How do they maneuver that instead of just trying to, you know, feed us some BS story and put in a red heading of that's why both X, Y, and Z happened. So I must applaud production for the way they're handling this at the moment.
Yeah, and that's what's been, I mean, for the people who are watching All Stars, Australian Survivor, in comparison, it's been so stark because they've lent into it so much and the story is that much richer, where we've said Australian Survivor has kind of avoided speaking about those relationships unless they literally happened on the show. So I think that's been a really great part of these excellent narratives. And another thing I wanted to talk about and get your opinion on, you know, as a super fan, is people are referring to this, it's been around Twitter, as like a Game Changers level boot order. Like, the same as Game Changers, where the big dogs went early, we were left with the Sierra Dawn Thomases, the Troy Vans, the Sarah Lucinas. I don't know why I did this by calling them out, but by name, but I did. But it was clear, like, that's how you look at it, like, when it's an inconsistent cast and people who are clearly the Sandras of the world, and, you know, Tony and everyone, they went really early, and it was so inconsistent. So do you see it like that? Because we lost Parvati and Sandra this week, and they've joined, you know, every other old schooler that's not Yule, most of the other multi-time players, and it seems like we're left with kind of maybe the lesser winners, but, like, I don't know if I want to call them that, but that seems to be kind of one perception.
Shannon, are your DMs open? Because if you speak to some of these people as lesser winners, you know, you're going to get a lot.
Oh, I don't think they're lesser winners. I want to put, I will get your opinion, but I don't believe this to be the case. But that's the perception out there.
No, I'm just joking. No, I think you hit the nail on the head, Shannon. I think Randy Neupel put out a Survivor tweet just before the season aired. He did like 240 drafts or whatever about the season. And if you look at like the people who, now, this is 240, you know, fans over the world who draft the teams. And if you look at, like, the lowest pick rate, I think it was, like, Sandra, Rob were, like, super low, right? And then on the high end of a spectrum, I think the 1 and 2 picks were Tyus and Natalie. And the players are understanding exactly that. They're understanding on the one side, these guys are such big threats, you know, like Rob, you know, he's played 4 times, there's a statue of him, and Sandra's won 2x. And on the other side, they understand that Tyson is such an obvious non-threat that he's become threatening. Natalie the same. That if you look at like this bell curve, they've taken the top half and the bottom half, they've cut it off, and they say, okay, we in the middle need to stay in the middle. And that's what I do agree with you. They're not lesser winners, but it's people who maybe did not have a flashy win, you know, like Denise or Sophie or Kim. They've just played this, you know. They're in the middle of the expectations right now, and you know it's easy in Survivor to go back and say, yeah, well, hindsight is 2020. There was a big mistake that was made, but I think that move where they decided, okay, they had a choice: do we vote out Tyson or do we vote out somebody else? I think if the big players had kept Tyson, quote unquote big players, and got rid of somebody like a Nick, you know, they would have gathered more momentum, but now, you know, they're on the wrong side, and they're just going to cannibalize these quote-unquote big players. And that middle of the pack, in terms of the preseason expectations, I think those are going to be the players who's going to make it deep in the season.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't describe Tyson and Nat as, like, the lower end of the spectrum. I just think it was, like, Rob and Sandra in Poverty, they didn't get picked high in draft because they're like, they're the Mount Rushmore. And the last 2 weeks has really felt like we've taken like a sledgehammer to the Survivor Mount Rushmore. Yeah. They've all been voted out.
Exactly.
But I feel like someone like, especially like a Tyson, was maybe like that at that second level of legendary. But if I was drafting, which I was, you would think like, okay, well, he's not going to go the way of a Boston Rob, but he's still that good that I'll draft him really high. But it's been interesting that the way the season has gone is that even if you were like at those second levels of legendary, like an Ethan, for example, and like a Tyson, maybe it was circumstantial, but you still had it coming for you. So no legend was really safe. I mean, Tony's still there and you're still there. Like a few of them have been safe. But in terms of like the 8 players that have gone, it's been predominantly legends. And there's been very little reprieve from that. None of the recent winners, no, you know, none of the one-time recent winners, the one-time, so they're all old school. So that legendary really does sit on edge of extinction. So it is interesting. It's definitely different than I think, you know, we all kind of thought it would be. But for someone like Tyson, he would have been picked high as well because he could come back from edge of extinction now or later and he could still win. So he's got good skills for the game. I'm very interested to see how it does play out. Because yeah, I mean, that's a lot of legendary over at Edge of Extinction, but for me, it's not even close to Game Changers. Like, look at who we still have in the game. Like, you're complaining. We still have these amazing, amazing characters on every tribe because every single person in the game, not one of them is a weak spot. So it can't be like Game Changers for me because it's too consistent a cast, where it's perfect. And even the people I was worried about preseason have, you know, exceeded my expectations. So, for me, I'm loving it. Even when my favorites go and it's depressing, like, I'm still loving it.
Yes, I think you make a good point about about the cast being a bit more even spread. You know, now, sure, some of them have played multiple times. You know, this is Rob's fifth outing to a survival location, and somebody like Sophie has only played once without a swap. You know, so sure, there are a bit discrepancies, but in terms of, you know, like Jeff said, everybody has one. So now it's just a matter of what your metric is of who's a good player, who's a bad player, or you know, who's a legend and who's not. And as we've seen so many times in Survivor, you know, across all different franchises, it's that theme of nothing unites people like a common enemy, right? And if you're sitting with a big group and you can, whatever the label is you put on the other person, whether it's from a different starting tribe, or you know, we're all it's an all-female alliance that you're rid of the guys, or if it's, well, we've played one time, those guys have played multiple times, whatever the label is you can put on that person to get your majority to vote them out, you know, you do that in the game. We've seen this so many times that I think it's happening again. Now it's a much more higher tiered or complex label that you have to find out amongst, you know, these different players. But I mean, the people who are doing it are doing a fantastic job of getting rid of those players. And you can't fault them. I mean, if I was Nick, I would have done exactly the same, you know, put yourself in an equal foot to say, well, let's make the merge and see what happens. And I think if you're looking from their perspective, you know, they're playing the game perfectly.
Yeah, but it's interesting that you talk about the cultures of each of these tribes and how they kind of converge and diverge, because one of the things from the original tribe that was actually pretty similar was this narrative and this power structure kind of leading the dynamics. You know, on Old Dakar, it was Yule and his one-timers, the unconnected players. And on Old Sele, it was the new school players. It became new school versus old school. So those are kind of like, you know, two sides of the same coin, where really, like, either way, you are either going after people who've played multiple times or who have multiple connections, so who are probably seen as more legendary players. So that's kind of got to the point now where we see it manifesting, we've seen the legends go home, and then it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you see the reaction when Rob has been voted out, as Jeff said, biggest reaction of the season, and then to follow that with Parvati and Sandra, like, I would be worried not to be a threat, because now it kind of feels like the dominoes are just falling and people will just end up going into that cycle because it's what's just been happening. So I think it's been led, and then it's taken on its own momentum, and now I would be very concerned. In fact, I am most concerned going into next week, which doesn't look like it's going to be a merge, for Tony. I think I could see that arc going that way, and that does really concern me.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, Tony's got his back against the wall, but we'll get to that a bit later. One thing I want to add on, it's like I mentioned earlier, it's almost this chaos theory kind of vibe where, you know, a butterfly on the one side of the world can start a hurricane on the other side. And there's that thing of, there's that one or two critical votes in the beginning of in which direction do we send this season. And if, for some reason, like I said, they've kept Tony, then, you know, the Tonys and the Sandras could have started, stuck together. And if we play this out with a different, you know, different iteration of a game, we could see this going down a whole different road. We see a final eight of Rob and Sandra and Tony and you know, Tyson. But no, that's that water shift moment that happened earlier in the season, and now this has got so much traction. I don't think you're going to stop it. So if you have at any point in time had a big reputation or been a big player, played multiple times, I mean, you know, then you're on a hit list, and these people are coming for you. So you better do what you can to survive right now. If you're, you know, somebody like the likes of Tony or, you know, even Michelle Adam, yeah, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was actually really supportive when they took out Tyson, because I was like, if it was maybe a bit earlier, they would need Tyson as a shield. But considering you're going to be swapping inevitably the next episode anyway, just based on precedent, like, you might as well take him out, because he's no good to you as a shield if you're not on his tribe, and like, these whole tribe dynamics are going to change. But like, now looking back in it and talking about it as we have in terms of the culture, like, yeah, maybe on a season where, you know, at that point it was really kind of just like Ethan and some of the other old schoolers and that who had been voted out, and it's been just like the as I think Stephen Fishback called the villain apocalypse since then, as all the villains were voted out. So Tyson did kind of get the ball rolling, but in hindsight, yes, even if you were going to change tribes from him, taking out a Nick who was like the epitome of like the lesser threat, new school, one-time unconnected winner, like he represents all of those things, taking that out just to make a statement, even if you're going to swap, compared to like Tyson, who's played so many times, who's so connected, who's such a threat, it might have made an important statement just to the culture of the overall game. And now the ball is rolling in a very uncomfortable direction for, you know, connected players.
That's what I wanted to get to. And I think, you know, a lot of this course, if you follow all, you know, players and whatnot on social media and you read what the general public's opinion is, a lot of the discourse is always, is this a good move? And then the follow-up answer, the follow-up question to that statement should be, for who? You know, it depends on which side of the fence you are. If you are a Rob or a Sandra supporter, then taking out Tyson was the wrong move because, you know, they needed to keep him around. If you are a Michelle or a Nick supporter, taking out Tyson was absolutely the correct move. So I think that's something we should always keep in mind is it's a matter of perspective from where you are standing for who is that a good move. And I think people get so invested in their one individual who they support that they don't always understand the argument of a different person's opinion on why they're saying this is a good or a bad move.
Well, I mean, I thought the move was literally good for Sandra specifically. When she took out Tyson, she was like something of a swing vote there because I just thought it's good to keep the tribe unified, which is probably true. Like, I'm not saying that her taking out Tyson directly led to her downfall with circumstances and situations that have come in between and a swap and an idol and a whole bunch of things we're going to talk about. There's a lot of things that led to Sandra going home that aren't necessarily like, well, she took out Tyson. But I think I underestimated how important perception was. It's been, as they've said, lions versus hyenas, that's all perception. And I think I underestimated how much of a driving force that would begin to become. Again, I'm not sure if it ends up directly leading to her demise, but I think more than I realized at the time, there was something to be said for like, just send someone to Edge of Extinction who's so different to you and who represents a totally different type of gameplay who kind of makes everyone think, okay, well, you know, maybe we can continue on that path, or maybe there's merit in voting out a different type of player. And now it's just kind of become a little bit homogenous with these legends, with all villains, with Mount Rushmore type players, kind of started from the Tyson vote. Again, impossible to know. I do think hindsight's 2020. I did understand the move from her perspective at the time, but looking back at it now, you're like, it's unfortunate that all the villains get voted out, starting with Tyson, ending with Sandra. And yeah, it might be a cultural thing. It might be a perception thing. And I think I was looking at it kind of on a micro level of like, okay, what makes sense for this tribe and this exact dynamic as it's going to swap, rather than looking at like, and how are people viewing the game as a whole?
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct. And I think Sandra's plan was, you know, she votes out Tyson, and it means you can just sit tight and hope something else happens. But I think, yeah, now is maybe a good time to get into the how do you want to do the challenge? How do you want to do this? Shannon, we want to go do the challenge first, or we want to go to trial? Because I want to speak about this challenge, and I've got a big after the fact proposal that I want to put on the table.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, do that. But like the table maze is what it was, but yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I went back and rewatched the episode, and something that Adam said. I mean, Adam's a super fan. We know this. He said, "This challenge was a 2-for-1 special. You know, if you survive this one, you go from 14 to 12. So you're not just surviving. You're not just surviving a single tribal. You've essentially got, you know, two places closer to that merge. I mean, you got to assume a 12 or 10, 11, random out there. It's gonna be they're gonna do one extinction and then it's gonna be the merge. So I want to know. And like I say, I want to be 2020, but if you were Poverty, right, and you're standing on that mat, and Jeff says, okay, we are only one tribe is going to be immune, two tribes going to tribal council tonight, and you understand the odds of what's happening. And as Natalie said, you know, if you got three or four tokens, you're a billionaire. And at that time, Poverty was a billionaire. I think if ever there was a challenge to say, Jeff, can we get a second to really chat and pull our tokens and buy whatever the tribe advantage is? I think this was the challenge to do it.
I completely agree. I had the same thing in my notes. It's perfect for Poverty, who going into the episode has four tokens, ends up spending one on the nullifier, which is like, should we just spend because things are sent to us? Is that useful? Obviously, it was not a useful advantage to her and would never be in her minority position there, but maybe in the future. She spends that token, she goes down to three, but she and Michelle together, just the two of them, can be buying that challenge advantage. I agree that would have been so valuable when just one of you is going. They only just lost at the challenge. They're a very strong tribe anyway, but you want that boost. And yeah, when they're in such dire straights, and you would assume a merge is coming the next week, even though it's not, but then you could win again. Like, yeah, I think you definitely need to be making sure you have a better chance at that challenge.
Yeah, and I think it's the argument of, you know, a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. You know, what's the use of accumulating these fire tokens? Now, obviously, you know, these players don't know what's going to – some of them have had some peek behind the curtain of what's going to happen. But if you're saying, well, I do have this, and it's not that it's burning a hole in your pocket like an idol which you just want to use, but if you're saying, let's just quickly take a step back. We have this. I have a four, and I checked out this menu. I went back and watched the first episode. For an advantage in the challenge, you need four tokens, right? So she can say, guys, I've got two. Can anybody put two more on the table? And if not, like, okay, well, fuck, I've got three. You know, can we get a third one? This is it.
She had four, but she had four going into the episode, you know.
Sure. We don't know what the timeline is on when she bought the nullifier. But let's say, let's give her the benefit of the doubt and since she has three. I mean, if you're Wendell, you're like, well, if I put down one token now, you know, saves us two spaces in the game. And at the same time, it can be something that can solidify you as, guys, I'm with this crew. Let's just do it. So I think there was a chance gone begging. Now, after the fact, you want to start, you know, negotiating with your tokens. And like I said, I mean, you could have won the challenge. But if you were that rich at that point in time of the game, and you are in a minority position, I think that's a big risk and a big gamble to not at least offer that conversation.
Is the fear that you, like, you buy the advantage, you have to obviously buy it publicly because you have an advantage. Is the fear then that, like, the other tribes buy an advantage and it negates your advantage and then you've all just, like, completely wasted these fire tokens? Because I'm trying to think, could any of the other tribes, I mean, there's four and five of them, so if they each all just have one fire token, they can afford it. Let me get the, okay, I've got the counts up here. So, so Yara could not have bought it. They only have three fire tokens between the four of them.
Yeah.
But Dekal could have also bought one. So they don't know, obviously, what Yara has. So maybe that's the fear, but I would just be doing it because the odds of everyone pulling their fire tokens together is pretty low. Parvati has three to her name. It's just one alliance of her and Michelle doing that. And I do think we have some questions like, what could Parvati have done? They knew that they were in such a bad position, and I completely agree. That can get you through to the merge. And I would have 100%, after especially seeing, you know, that it was two tribes going to tribal council, I would have definitely been buying the tribe advantage. But it's interesting that fire tokens, I thought a few days ago, were kind of a bust. And then in this episode, ended up being everything. Yeah. And like, I mean, even when it didn't really pay off, like the Wendell Parvati discussions, it was still really interesting. Like, I'm really enjoying how they work in the in-game dynamics. I still think they're pretty uninspired when it's just like, sell an advantage to someone for one fire token, zero collaboration, just a very simple transaction. That's a bit boring. But the way we've seen it change the way you communicate with each other and bargain with each other and pitch and value each other, we saw that this episode. And now I'm like, okay, fire tokens are kind of fun.
Exactly. And look, obviously, we know there's a ton happening and we didn't get to see it. But you had to assume when Amber gets voted out that he gave his fire token to when Amber got voted out, she gave a fire token to Rob, right? Then you got to assume, and maybe Ethan as well gave it to Rob. Now, Rob has two. Now, you got to assume when Rob goes out, he's going to give it to his closest ally, which is either Tyson or Parvati in this game. Tyson outside the game, Parvati in the game. Now, she's voted out. So, obviously, you got to assume that she's sitting on more than one if you're a player. I mean, that's you have to discuss it all the time. Like, you know, what does he have? What does she have? So, and if she does that, now, you know, people's like, what is she, you know, because Parvati's whole thing is, you know, there's a lot more underneath the surface than meets the eye. Now, if she goes and says, okay, well, I'm going to empty, I've got three tokens, I'm going to put it all in the loan, let's buy it. It can, at the same time, it's a bold move, but at the same time, I think it reduces her threat level where people are like, oh, shucks, she's got nothing now. You know, if we take her out, she's not going to be able to give us anything. And, you know, she's not a target anymore because she can't buy advantages. So mm-hmm. I think it's, and like I say, I know retrospectively in a game of Survivor, it's very easy. And trust me, I've been there making mistakes in the heat of a moment. But I think she's missing a big opportunity here.
Yeah, I think that the reason we've seen so much intrigue this episode from the fire tokens is because, like, people don't know what is going on. You know, like, they don't know what are they going to, you know, especially people who haven't been sent an advantage and had to buy one, but which is most of the people in the game. But, like, they don't know how much are things going to cost? Even Wendell said, are they going to turn into idols and or advantages? Like, how powerful are they going to be? If I was Parvati and I was thinking like, okay, it's one fire token for a nullifier, that to me would definitely be worth my other three tokens to try and win a challenge, because that to get through to the merge is definitely worth three idol nullifiers. So she might have a bit of a sense of the exchange rate and the currency there. But I think that there's just so much confusion around it that there's fear. It's like, how powerful is this going to be? Is this going to decide the game? And I'm also like really wondering how open are these conversations? Like, I was struck by the fact that like Sandra knew that Denise had two fire tokens. Did we see that conversation where she told her that? Like, you know, and then Wendell clearly knows that Parvati has at least two because they're having that conversation quite openly. So, like, how much subterfuge is going around with people lying about what's in their bank account? That's really interesting to me as well.
Definitely. Like I say, we know this, that there's obviously a lot of conversation that happens that's not caught on the lens. One thing I want to point out is, okay, we know Parvati is going to the edge now. This is, and it's a different conversation. Maybe we get to it later. But imagine she rocks up at the edge and she's like, yo, guys, you know, who still be the nullifier? And everybody's just like, wasn't me.
Yeah.
I think that adds another bit of like complexity of like, oh, yeah, I got to live with these people, but none of them are shooting straight. You know, so that's also quite fun. I don't know if I probably won't get into that kind of detail, but I think it might be a fun conversation to see if she's trying to, you know, interrogate them or try and pry it out of the information out of somebody. Like, I mean, she's got to assume it's got to be Rob, right? Because, you know, he's a close ally.
But Tyson told her like, secret, so that could be quite damaging for him.
Exactly, but now that's my point. Like, that's Tyson's an item, right? Yeah, go for my stuff. I don't have a token.
Yeah, because so many people don't know how it works. Because the only people to sell anyone anything are Nat and now Tyson. So everyone else doesn't know how to get fire tokens that aren't just like getting logs from a hill.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah. It's like, you're right. The people on Edge of Extinction don't really know what's going on unless you like are ruling the roost like Nat or like Tyson just found it. Yeah, because it's interesting. Like, the communication is so different on Edge of Extinction to, especially with these returnees who've been voted out of the game, I think. Like, that's how we saw like Kelly Wentworth come to Edge of Extinction and be like, oh, I had an idol and Lauren has one too. And it's like, because she's been voted out twice, she's used to that, like, you know, ability to just be like, okay, the game is done. Let me like completely unleash all this information and like basically just relieve myself of all of this burdenous information, but yet you're still in the game. And then Chris Underwood used that to his advantage. So I do wonder, it's like when all these winners many of them haven't been voted out, but many of them have been voted out, especially some of them on Edge of Extinction, when they they've all had that feeling of the game being over, do they get to Edge of Extinction a little bit less in game mode? Does the information fly a little bit more freely? Or because they are such, you know, veterans and like legends, do they keep it more close to the vest as we've seen someone like Nat and Tyson do? So maybe it's a little bit different depending on who you are, but I'm really interested in like, how does the mentality and the communication change once you go from being like an active player to someone on the edge?
Yeah. And if I can weigh in on that as somebody who has played the game, I think your gut instinct will be to, you know, play it by the ear, you know, shoot from the hip, just see what happens when you get there. But like I said, this is it's coming from somebody who's been there. The most mentally taxing days in Survivor are the days when nothing happens. You know, whenever somebody else goes to tribal council, or, you know, on our season, the day where spoilers, if you want to skip our season,
no,
if you haven't watched our season.
when
Steffi and Maba went to the Island of Seekers and had their little four in a row deal, it's a whole day, and it's like, it's deep in the game. It's like day 33, day 32, whatever. It's late in the game, and to have a whole day of doing nothing, it just, it messes with your mind so much. Where, you know, usually, you know, you wake, production's there, like, okay, guys, you know, in 40 minutes, we're heading out, and then you get in a boat or a bus or whatever, and you get your challenge, and when you get there, you know, like, explain the game to you, and you play the challenge, whether it's reward or immunity, you come back. So your mind's constantly busy, and now when you've got nothing to do, that's the days where it gets really difficult to almost, you know, keep your sanity and don't go off your rocker. Now, on the edge, you've got that, essentially, whatever now, day 16, Sandra said, day 16, go again. It's been 16 days with, they've had, what, two or three challenges where they had to, like, you know, cable locks up and down, but nothing is happening. And I could just think that you are going out of your mind sitting there. You've got, you can't read, you can't do anything. I mean, you're not going anywhere. You're seeing the same, you know, X by X square meters of beach. And that begs with the question, does these players, do they go into a position where say, well, guys, you know, for our own sanity, let's just be upfront, let's help each other like we did with Ethan, you know, go up with him against when he had to walk for his 20th log? Or do you still stay in game mode and say, guys, you know, I'm not going to shoot straight. I'm going to keep my cards close to the vest, like you said, and not let anything slip. And I think that's maybe like a different conversation or a different thing, which we haven't seen a lot. But what is the, you mentioned the culture now, what is the culture on Edge? Is it let's support one another to keep our sanity, or is it still I'm in the game and I want to get my shot. I'm going to not be play open cards with you. And then let that paranoia go to, you know, level 10,000. I think it would be interesting if we knew that. I think it's the latter, but we don't know.
I wonder how the culture also changes maybe like after the first challenge, because I know it was like everyone was playing open hand in season 38. When it was getting down to that second challenge, everyone just had all these open plans that they were hoping like the person who came back would utilize, and they would all help each other because only one person could go back. So maybe knowing one of these other people could be in the game with you at some point if there's two more challenges to go, that might change it up. But yeah, we saw Tyson, you know, pretended to pee rather than telling Rob that he'd found something. And Rob's his like literal good friend in real life.
Yeah.
So he's still definitely in game mode. I think that it does make a difference that it's these level of players. I mean, I can't imagine Parvati getting to Edge and being like, oh, I had a nullifier, which of you sent it to me? But then again, I wouldn't have imagined it from Kelly Wentworth, who's also a veteran, to come in and be like, oh, this is what's going on, when you're still technically actively in the game. I think it's just such a strange mentality that I wouldn't really begrudge anyone for slipping up. But I also think maybe like as they get more used to the concept, we'll see fewer slip ups, especially from winners.
Exactly. And you mentioned Tyson now. When we did Winner Picks, I said, you know, my head says Denise is going to win, but my heart says Tyson. So I went to my heart, as I always do, and I picked Tyson. Mm-hmm. So, I love Tyson's. He's still in it, yeah. But I loved his waste not, want not kind of attitude. Like, I've got one token, I'm going to look the fool if I, you know, save up for three. So let's just get this peanut butter over and done with. And, yeah, that's such a Tyson move. I it was hilarious watching him just like, you know, like, no, I'm not going to sit on this for too long. Let's just grab this and be done with it.
My concern with that was that, well, I mean, I don't know how helpful peanut butter can be. Maybe you can speak more to that, on, you know, having been on the island, how helpful would that have been? But my concern is that it's just one token to get an advantage. He talks about not wanting to spend three on an idol because if you can't get back in, that idol's useless, so just focus on getting back in, which I get.
To quote him, you are going to look the fool.
Yes. It's a very droll, you know, Tyson way of saying that. But like, my concern is that it's just one token for an advantage, and he knows that the other four have at least one advantage. Nat has many. So my concern is not that he won't get an advantage, because we saw, like, Aubrey got to practice before. It wasn't that helpful. I can see not taking it, but I worry he'll be disadvantaged because other people will get advantages. And then he'll basically like be behind the status quo.
Look, that's obviously the Sophie's choice you're sitting with, you know. Which one do you go for? But you mentioned playing. I will come in here as a player and say, you know, day 16, if you haven't won any kind of big reward, I mean, you can eat a horse at that point in time. That's the first thing. And in our season, in that very first challenge, we had to run around and collect a bunch of stuff. And I went for the furthest, spending a lot of resources, getting a personal advantage, not a tribe advantage. Didn't know that at the time. And we were severely undernourished in that first week compared to other tribes who had like food platters and food that's readily eatable. And you can see that in, I think it's the night we lose Stinkting, that run through my challenge, where it's something that if you tell me now to go up against, let's say, like Rocco or whoever, head to head, you know, I'll back myself to be able to do it. But at that time, we had nothing to eat. It rained. We couldn't cook our rice. And we were just, our tribe were just so depleted after only a week of not eating compared to the other people who had, even if it's just a food plate or something. So I definitely think in a single one-on-one kind of situation. Now, I don't know. I'm not a some random Jack Slough who doesn't know about peanut butter. I'm one of those people who don't know a lot about peanut butter, but I will definitely say having substance when other people did not in a one-on-one challenge. I would say, let's say, obviously you don't know what the advantage is, but I would say the nutrition might be more valuable than you know, knowing what the challenge is or having a reduced target that you have to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, and Tyson is so good physically, he can probably make it up. And, like, he knows what's going to work for him physically, mentally. He talked about, like, basically just, like, his sense of optimism and mood, which is pretty crucial. So, like, I mean, I'm not going to, like, dig too hard into it. Like, he didn't peanut butter, but yeah.
And one thing we've seen before, I mean, we looked at, you know, when Cochrane had the advantage in South Pacific, you know, that was a substantial advantage, you know, going, I think it was like two knots back into that leaning challenge. But then we've seen Wendell getting that advantage of if you lose the balance, you can restart. But, you know, it's almost a void advantage, because if you can't keep the balance once, you're not going to keep it twice. So gambling on what advantage do you get, it's also a bit of uncertainty where you're like, you know, do I venture on this uncertainty, or do I, you know, take the concrete advantage that I know that I'm achieving? So I think that's also something that factors in.
That's really true. That's a good point. Because advantages can be so vague, as you said. Like, they had one on Australian Survivor this season, which was, like, the worst advantage ever. It was, like, you had to stack one fewer block, which was, like, a 2.5-hour challenge in order to get the advantage, and then the challenge was only, like, 3 minutes. It was a terrible advantage.
My dad will love you. He said it's the worst advantage he's ever seen in the game.
Yeah, exactly. So it can be helpful. But I agree. I think you've turned me onto the peanut butter, because it's like, at least that you know what you're getting and you then can control it, and you know that, like, then it's on you and you have that better emotional state and you have some calories in you, where it's like, how much would you hate if you spent your token on it and it did end up being something that wasn't worthwhile? It's like, you might as well just take the control in your own hands. I've been convinced on that now. But how are we 40 minutes into this podcast and we have not spoken about Denise's move? Like, I want to deconstruct Denise Construct. That did not work, but it's been a long day. I want to talk about why this was so good. I mean, I think there's been, you know, everything's been analyzed, and we will analyze it, of like, did she need to play the idol on Jeremy? Did she need to vote out Sandra? Like, how many parts of this were, you know, flashy, but how many were, like, flashy and good? But in terms of, like, the flash and the history, I loved it because I was like, this is reminding me of so many, this is like a top 10 list of Survivor's best moments in one move. Like, she had the double idol play, which was originated by Parvati, and, you know, well, that it's pretty ironic that Parvati would go on the same night, but that it felt like that Parvati move in Heroes versus Villains, also because Sandra was voted out with her own idol, like JT was at that time. She, you know, kept her whole alliance safe, her and Jeremy, like three amigos, very Malcolm, her old ally. She also did the hold up row, which Malcolm did to Reynold, which is to, you know, get an idol from someone when you already have one in your bag, which is pretty sneaky. Sandra was also voted out when she should have been 100% safe, because it was the last time she could have used the idol, which kind of reminded me of Eric, who, like, went in there and it was like, you know, it was in the week talking about Survivor and the week leading up to it, it was like, Sandra's 1,000,000% safe because she has the idol and she's going to play it. And then she goes home. So it was like, you know, taking away that 100% surety and having her go home. So that's like the highlight reel of Survivor. And I could see elements of it, all of that in one play. And that really excited me.
This is, like you say, a top 10 move. But I think I know this, the tribal is, you know, the big climatic finish. Can we take a step back and just speak about the build up to this tribal, the way Sandra and Denise discussed this on the beach? Because I think there's a lot of subtle nuances there that set this whole thing in motion. Sandra comes to this with this deal. You know, you give me 2 fire tokens. We mentioned this now. She knows she had 2. You give me 1 before, 1 after. And then Denise suddenly realizes, okay, I've never made these big moves. My whole Survivor career has been, you know, just a scrambled survive. You know, that she's got the distinction of being to every single tribal council in her first season. And I don't know right now, but she's very, I don't know the exact stat, but she's very close to being, I mean, in terms of except being voted out first, I think her tribal council participation rate is extremely high. Mm-hmm. And then the move is actually brilliant if you think of it from, like, sitting on the beach, where Sandra comes to you and she's like, okay, you give me 1 token now and 1 after, that way you'll see it's legit. Now you spin it around, you sit, put yourself in the niche shoes. It's like, you're like, okay, I've now bought an idol for one token. If Sandra comes back, I have to give her my second token. And at the same time, we saw what happened with Kelly and Dean when Kelly was in the mix saying, oh, no, Dean, sorry, that tribe accounts when you play an idol. By the way, I saved you on the jury. And how that totally, you know, made him lose a lot of social capital at that point in time.
Mm.
Denise realizes, I can get this for one token. And if I send Sandra home with it, she's, you know, dead men tell no tales. You know, she can come back and say, no, objection. Your Honor, I actually saved her. Like, no, that's done. Whatever happens after, it's hearsay. It's like, well, Sandra said this on the edge. Like, no, what the hell? Sandra's always telling lies. She's fabricating stuff. So the move of getting an idol for one token, making a huge move to take out, you know, a person of Sandra's caliber, and then at the same time silencing her by sending her home. I mean, that is genius. I mean, Survivor Australia, I mean, Dave would have loved this. He would have been like, you know, you're a rock star in my eyes now. You know, you're going to be to the end. I think it was the way she set it up was perfectly.
Well, I just have to credit Denise as well and just say, I think that Denise is the one who was like, I'll do it for a token now and a token later. Because Denise is trying to act like she wants to verify that the idol is real. I mean, Sandra could be selling her a fake idol, right? Like, that's the pretense that she's putting on. So it's Sandra comes to her and is like, two idols for, you know, two tokens for the idol. And she's the one who's like, okay, one now, and then you know I'm coming back, right? Because you're telling me the idol is real. That's the only way I can come back. When I come back, I'll give you a token, and then you validated it for me. So she puts it out there, obviously with a very strong pretense, because Sandra has to prove to her that the idol is real. But we know in the back of our mind that she's just trying to, like, keep the change, which I absolutely love. But it's not only, like, dead man tell no tales. It's not only, like, she's sending Sandra to the edge of extinction so she can claim the move and no one can discredit her. Like, it is her move. It's not Sandra's move to send Sandra home with her own idol. I mean, in ways it is, but not in a good way. But if she just follows Sandra's instruction, votes for Tony, which is clearly what Sandra wants, uses her one idol, keeps the other, doesn't vote out Jeremy, like, that is Sandra's move. And that is something that if she sits with a jury, Sandra can say, like Kelly, you know, as you're saying, that's not Denise's move. I did all of that. Whereas now Denise, by doing this, has taken the game into her own hands, you know, by playing the idol on Jeremy to assure it, by voting out Sandra. No one is going to say this is anyone else's move. No one knew what was going to happen at that tribal council except Denise. So it's definitely her move. And that's why I love it, because coming into the season, I was so concerned for Denise as a huge Denise fan that I was wondering what was going to happen in terms of threat level. And then Tony came up with lions versus hyenas. And that was my concern, because Denise should not be a hyena. Like, if Denise was just on a different returning season, like, of course she's a lion. She's won the game. She's like a legend in and of itself. But yes, with winners, we see her as lower down on the pecking order when you compare it to some of these Mount Rushmore type players. And a hyena is really just the evolution of a goat, right? Like, that was my concern, that someone's going to have to be a goat and a more quiet social game with a worse reputation, a lesser reputation, could sit there and get zero votes against someone who has a bigger reputation. But Denise has taken that into her own hands. How often do you have two idols? How often do you have perfect information? How often are you the only one with that information? She took all of those tools in a very rare occasion where you can be like, wow, especially against these calibers of players, I hold all the cards. And she played those cards. And that's why I'll talk about every part of the move. But I think she has to play it exactly as she did, because she had to make sure that this move came off as epically as it did. Because I know it's pre-merge, but she's sending someone who will be on the jury. You know, everyone goes to the jury who's on edge of extinction. And even if she isn't somehow, people will hear about this. This move is one of the best we've seen, one of the biggest we've seen. Even if it's pre-merge, they will be talking about it at the final tribal council. And that could turn her. That changes the whole reputation. That could turn her from a goat into a winner. And that's why it's so crucial.
Sam, I just want to clarify. You said being a hyena is branded bad now. Is the level of insult, is being a hyena below being a goat? I just want to clarify that. That's where it sounds at.
Well, they're the same thing, right? Like these are all terms that we've used a million times, like movers and shakers, or like followers and leaders. Like, it's all the same thing. And unfortunately, hyena and goat, they're part of the same animal family.
I can just imagine a conversation with them where, you know, whoever, Kim's like, you can call me a goat, but you don't dare call me a hyena. I'm not a hyena.
I know, because it's like, the terminology we've used, like goat is usually greatest of all time, but we've made it like a bad thing, and now it's hyenas, and we just all accept this new verbiage, and we all have to roll with it, and it's like, it's getting too far.
I love how when somebody like brings up a term like meat shield or trust cluster, everybody just rolls with it. We're like, yeah, that's, you know, it's canon.
This is part of our dictionary now. Yeah, we just accept it. And we're all just going around talking like, yeah, like pagonging and stuff. Like, honestly, most of the conversations I probably have in my life are unintelligible, like, just anyway, but also because it's like I'm using all these made-up words that we've now just accepted as part of our lexicon. And yeah, the goat hyena, the guyena, what are we calling that hybrid? Because I'm telling you, it's the same thing.
Shannon, if I could weigh in on this move, and one thing I want to juxtapose the Denise move next to the poverty move. And we've seen it so many times where a player, when as soon as they have an idol in their back pocket, perhaps even a super idol, how their confidence level starts rising and how they're playing the game more aggressively. Look at Tony when he got the, you know, the Terry Pilar, idol. What's it called?
Tyler Perry idol. Yeah. See, that's another thing. We just talk about this as if it's like. This is not language. Sorry. Like, Tyler Perry is a whole new meaning to Survivor fans and the rest of the world, and we all just roll with it.
Yeah, when Yule and Tony had the Tyler Perry idol, how they started playing a bit more boldly. And I want to juxtapose this move next to what we saw with Poverty and the way she flamed out. Denise didn't have to move this. Didn't have to make this move. Denise could have, you know, literally sit on the fence, go into tribal council, play her own idol, and be like, okay, well, I saved myself. But knowing that she had an idol, it gave her a bit more impetus to say, hang on, I can do something big and something risky now. Where Poverty, on the other hand, she had, you know, she actually had a lot more to offer. She had three fire tokens and a nullifier, but she felt a lot less of that urge of, I need to make a move now to save myself, or how do I get out of a situation, because she didn't have anything that could really save her. And even though Denise didn't need her idol, you know, we'll get to playing at Jeremy now, we've seen this so many times where a player having a bit of an advantage, knowing I'm safe, how they start playing a bit more aggressively. And you should always, we've seen it with Dave now in Survivor Australia. We've seen it the way that Rob and Nicole played in our season. And essentially, you don't have it. You can play like that without it. But having that safety net below you when you're trapezing across a rope wire, it just makes it so much more easier to start playing and making these big moves.
Yeah, I was going to compare it to a very niche card game. I hope people are playing it. It's really good. It's called Exploding Kittens. And basically, you all have a defuse, which is kind of like an idol. It saves you when you get exploded by the cat. And then I'm always like picking up cards. Like, I'm way more, you know, just like guns firing when I have my defuse. But once I've used it, I'm like very scared, skipping turns. And I imagine that's what it's like. I feel like, did that resonate with anyone? Is anyone else playing Exploding Kittens? It is a great card game. But I feel like that's probably what it's like to have safety and power. I mean, even Sandra, she felt like she was safe, right? So that's why she's trying to do this.
Exactly.
So we can work for and against you. I mean, you can still get exploded by the cat, even, you know, if you have some power in your deck. I'm just carrying it on now for the sake of it, because I don't know how much Survivor is really like Exploding Kittens. But I do think that there's a confessional that Denise has where she's like, I have my idol, but I'm hoping to keep it for a later date. Then by the end of the episode, she's played two idols. So what changed? What changed is she realized that it had more power than just defense for her when she had two in her bag, when she had, again, that perfect information, when she had the power to completely decide what the numbers will be going forward for this tribe if they don't merge, when she had the power to make one of the biggest moves in Survivor history, to change her perception, to give herself a resume boost. And this is all you need on the resume. Like, it may just be one thing, but it's enough that it's like working at like Facebook or something. They just see this top thing and they hire you. That's what it's going to be like for her. So I think it was worth it for her to use both her idols, but make sure without a doubt that the move is going to come off. If they split a vote on Jeremy, which they might, if they're lying to her and voting for Jeremy, which they might be, she has made sure without a doubt that it's her move, it's not Sandra's move, and it was savage. And that is something a jury may vote for.
Exactly. And we heard, I think it was a talk, I don't know if you were part of it, my memory is a bit foggy on this, when Nick Yadanza spoke preseason with Rob, we said it's always, always better to have a loyal ally than to have an idol.
I hope and, so. Like, I hope that that's true.
100% confirmed. You would rather have an alliance of people you know. You know, I trust most people 80%, but this one individual I trust 98%. And then have an idol. Because an idol, you know, it can be a target on your back as well. And using your idol to solidify a bond with Jeremy. I mean, she knows, you know, Denise knows these players. And she's watched this season. She's seen Jeremy playing his idol for Fishback and how he's like, listen, if I'm with you, I got your back. And that's in the back of her mind as well. I mean, and Denise, you know, she's always played this kind of, you know, tagging her wagon to one or two big players and then going to the end of him, like she did with Malcolm, and then voting him out. But having an individual, you said, I'm with you 100%. And that person, it's not just, you know, lip service. Now you suddenly walk the walk. And now you've got a person who, if it's a 50-50 coin flip, they'll have your back. With the exception of Dean, this is the kind of behavior you see in Survivor. When if somebody really saves you, they're like, okay, well, I'm with you until the end. So burning an idol to save an ally, also keep in the back of your head, you know, she had to tell one or two people about the idol. She had to tell Adam, but he knows about it. So she can easily get into a situation deep in the game where people are like, well, Denise is an idol. We need to flush it out. But now she's like, she's also played it, secured an ally. And she's like, well, guys, you know, I just tried to protect, you know, me and Jeremy. Like, oh, okay, well, cool. You don't have an idol. But now we know, you know, person X, Y, and Z has an advantage. Now suddenly they're very hard on the radar. She decreases that and gets a almost lifelong ally. So I think it's a great move.
Yeah, I mean, true. Like, a lot of people know about the idol. Does she know that Adam and Ben aren't telling Sarah on Yara and that they're not going to merge and Sarah's going to be like to Sandra, Denise has an idol, especially Adam, who maybe, you know, she just voted against. So then Sandra's going to be like, well, why did she take mine? She could not play or reveal her other idol and leave Sandra in the game. I think the queen would be livid that obviously she got hold up Broad. Which no one wants to get. You don't want to be Reynold. And she had to take Sandra out at that stage. So from that perspective, like, I really do think that it was a good move because, yes, Jeremy voted against her, and I think we've confirmed this is the first time in history. I think we've confirmed that someone has played an idol on someone who actually voted for them at that tribal council, but I just want to put it out from the get-go that that is meaningless to me. Like, that's so meaningless to me. That says nothing to me about Jeremy and Denise's relationship. It is pure survival at a bad swap position. It doesn't mean that they can't go on and work with each other for a very, very long time. I mean, for Australian Survivor, we saw Vakama a couple of weeks ago, you know, go into a tribal council with the intent on turning on each other. Along comes a twist. They don't actually have to write it down, but the pen was almost to the parchment and they would have voted against each other. They never end up doing it. Circumstances change and they work together stronger than most alliances I've ever seen. And I do believe that that could be the case for Jeremy and Denise. I think it would have been no love lost. I totally understand. You were in survival mode and now we're back together and now we can really run some stuff. So to me, that's not a bad thing at all that he voted for her. I don't see it as a fracture in their relationship. And I should hope that he'll be more useful to her than an idol will be. I mean, if they don't merge next time, which they're not, it means that she doesn't need the idol to get through another tribal council. Because if Jeremy goes here, they go back to tribal council, she's going to use her idol anyway before the merge. Even beyond the merge, you should hope that he's, you know, he's an ally. He comes with other relationships. She doesn't have that many relationships on Old Sele, which is a dwindling tribe. And she's like an inherently social player, especially someone like Denise. So yes, of course she wants to keep one of her main social core connections that can offer information and protection and friendship and all of those other things. When an idol is a tool in your bag, but it's more one dimensional sometimes than an actual person can be.
No. Everything you said is true, Shannon. I think nobody in that position, when it's a, you know, you or me kind of dilemma, will begrudge the other person for writing down their name. We've seen it happen so many times where, you know, the two last, you know, dying members of an alliance, you know, turn on one another when it's a survival moment. And at the end of the game, they're like, you know, we saw it with AK and Shawnee. We're like, you know, it's. At some point in time, we're going to have to write down one each other's name. But, you know, at the end, they're like, oh, you know, I hope you win. You know?
Yeah.
Carry the torch for our minority alliance. So I do agree with you. I don't think there's any problem in that sense. The one thing I do want to touch on, maybe it's in your notes. We're speaking about how Denise is splashing out of multiple idols. How is it possible that in a situation like this, that Kim still sat on her idol and did not play? That's the thing that's boggling my mind this whole week.
Well, I have to credit Kim for that, actually. Like, if her read is that good to know that she wasn't on the radar, which it seems like she absolutely wasn't, if her relationship is good enough with Denise, which we have seen some connection that she doesn't think Denise would idle her out, she doesn't play her idol, and, like, nerves of steel, but I don't see that as luck. Like, I see that as a really good read by her.
That's and obviously we didn't see that conversation. Maybe, you know, the editing has now, you know, come to a point where they show us information after the fact. But I'm curious to know if Kim left her idol at home because she was so certain that it's either going to be Denise or Jeremy, which I don't think, you know, a player like Kim would do. But now, you know, Denise plays hers. Okay, who's a backup target? Jeremy. Oh, snap. He's also safe. How many times have we seen an idol train start, you know, and then, you know, just say, well, at least let me be safe because, you know, what happens on the revote? And so, or shared information with Denise telling her, listen, Kim, I'm going to do some monkey business tonight. I promise you it's not you. Just roll with it. That's maybe the third iteration. But whichever combination, sitting on that idol, if you have the ability to play it and not play it by Kim, that is you mentioned the whale balls in an earlier podcast. That is some whale balls that she has shown right there.
Yeah, I guess, like, I mean, if Denise did give her some information, that would be a lot, because obviously Kim knows all the votes are going to Denise. I mean, obviously Denise hasn't even clued in Jeremy, who she's going to play an idol for. I think it's more just like Kim being like, Denise would not idol me out. Like, if anything, she's going definitely Tony or Sandra before me. And she knows all the votes are coming for Denise, so she knows it's just on Denise's vote, and she trusts in that relationship, I guess, to know that she wouldn't do that. And she's right, because it doesn't seem like that's something that Denise even considered. Like, if it was going to be Sandra's plan, it was going to be Tony or maybe a Jeremy. It ended up being Sandra. Like, Kim's name was the one name in this tiny tribe that just was completely above it all.
No, I do agree. Like I say, we're speculating now. We don't have all the information, but to sit there and dig your heels in and say, it's not going to be me. You got a 1 in 3 chance of it being you, you know, whoever she decided
to go after. But it's not 1 in 3. Like, that's in a perfect world. Like, it's more... Yeah. You know, it could be as low as 0, you know, if she's definitely voting out, if she's that much closer to you than Tony and Sandra, then it's not really 33%. You know, that's too much in a vacuum.
No, for sure. I'm just crediting her saying, you know, well done on Kim on being, you know, nerves of steel to survive that moment.
Nerves of steel and an excellent read to know that, to have that relationship, and to have made that relationship as well with Denise, where Denise is coming for Sandra, and we'll talk about that. And obviously, she doesn't want to come after Kim, who's in her own right a huge threat, and Denise has all the power, and she chooses not to go for Kim. And that's a credit to Kim's social game with Denise as well. So I think she did a lot of really good things there, including, like, you know, you saw her soothing Tony. Like, Kim is, you know, calmness personified. That's why I think she was so great in her season, and she showed it there. Because in terms of the social relationship between Sandra and Denise, I think a lot of people have been like, well, why vote out Sandra if she's willing to work with you? And it's like, was Sandra willing to work with Denise long term? Because if she was, I don't think she sold it very well. Because I was seeing a lot of, especially in confessional, like, it wasn't so much about saving Denise. It seemed much more about, like, an anti-Tony and Jeremy move for her. It seemed really clinical, very transactional, about getting these flyer tokens. Like, it didn't seem to be very much about her relationship with Denise at all. If anything, Denise was like, Sandra and I play a very, very different game, which didn't really work for her. And again, Denise feeds off those social connections. So I don't know how much of a relationship, even a working relationship, there would be between Sandra and Denise.
No, definitely. And I think it's very similar to the conversation that Parvati had with Wendell, where Wendell was like, what's in this for her? If I go along with this, you know, what's in it for her? And I think Denise had the same kind of thing, like what's in it for Sandra if I go along with this plan fully? Another thing I just want to touch on with the Kim, Sandra, Denise dynamic, how excellent was that scene where we've got the single take of a camera who's on Sandra, and she's like midway just, you know, talking about buying an idol to cookies and cream. And then the cameraman just very casually, you know, just arches back, pivots on to Kim, who's coming in, because obviously he's got a read on what's happening. That is such a stellar scene of survivor photography. I mean, that happens a lot. I mean, you know, we see that so many times, but like, oh, chips, here comes a person. But the way that the camera could portray to us in that situation was golden.
Yeah, and like seeing it as a fan where you don't get to see it that much, and just how like effortlessly they changed the conversation was like very, very fun. But that whole conversation to me was like, Sandra is not approaching this right. Like, that is not how I would approach Denise. If I wanted to work with Denise or to get Denise to do my bidding, I'd be like, Denise, I feel like we got to go with the girls. I feel like we have to, you know, we have to have an alliance. I feel really good about you. I mean, she did say she was a wonderful person, but it didn't seem to go very well. I think it needs to be less about like, well, how can I get your tokens? It seemed just so transactional to me. And I think the way to work with Denise is to be very genuinely like, I want to work with you and be your friend and have this relationship and have like a long-term strategic alliance. And I didn't feel that a lot from Sandra.
Exactly. And I think, Denise looked like somebody who's, she's very emotionally plugged in. You know, maybe it's because of her job or because of her personality. But like you said, and maybe we see that, you mentioned Mean Girls. We see that almost kind of Mean Girls scene where it's her, Michelle, and Sandra. And Sandra's like, Denise, you're a very nice girl. Ha ha, kidding.
Mm-hmm. And Denise, oh my God, like, I love your skirt. Yeah, that's what
I'm
it was
gonna
like.
I'm
going
to vote you out. Ha ha ha, joke. You know, and Kim is like, ha ha, please don't fight. We're on the same page.
But it was awkward.
You know, everybody... It's awkward, and everybody knows that the other person is you know, telling a half truth and a half lie. But yeah, I think, yeah, once again, just to bring it back to production, I think this whole episode and this sequence and the tribal, the way they've been able to tell us a story instead of it just being a flashy move, fleshing it out and giving us a backstory, I think it's a stellar piece of storytelling from the editor's point of view.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me that people don't think it should have been Sandra, because as we've said, like, we think she should have saved Jeremy. You can't save Jeremy without taking out Sandra, because then you've left Sandra in the game and she knows that you've played her with having two idols. And yeah, we think exactly. But even if you don't think she should have saved Jeremy or, you know, should have just left that to chance, like, there are so many reasons to get rid of Sandra. Like, she is such a threat anyway. She's pretty golden at the merge. So if you let her get there, she might be around for a while taking your spot. Tony and Kim seem pretty disparate, so you and Jeremy will definitely have like the power there. You can then go to Tony and be like, Sandra wanted me to get you out, she gave me this idol, and kind of maybe make a connection with Tony. You've also like swung Kim, who, you know, Sandra said, leave me and Kim alone, just vote for one of the boys. So you don't want to keep the two that are tight in a tribe of four. You'd rather keep like your two and then two ones, and then you have the power. You can sway Kim, who kind of seemed like she wanted to go that way anyway, but maybe didn't want to make a big flip. Well, now you've swayed her over to your side. You've kept that connection for the next vote. And it was clearly a baller move. And it's like, if she doesn't vote out Sandra and doesn't use the idol and just votes out Tony, then she can't take credit for it. And like, she needs obviously a massive, massive boost to her resume, and she's got it. And the great thing about it is that it's not such a big boost that getting to the merge, she'll be immediately targeted, because she's still there next to all the other Mount Rushmore players. You know, you've still got Tony, you've still got a million other players to vote out. I still think that she's got a way to go, you know, to get to the end. She has a pathway, but when she gets there, she just has like such a good resume point. And I also think like, you want to be in a winning position, and this puts her in a winning position. Even if it does make her a bigger threat who has a bit of a more difficult pathway, it means that she has a better chance of actually winning. So then I have to be like, yes, that was the right thing to do.
Exactly. And I think, you know, Tony right now, he's a sandwich short of a picnic. You know, he's running up and down a spice shack, you know, he's seeing all kinds of crazy antics. So even if they lose and they go have to go to trouble again, they can say, okay, well, you know, Jeremy started with me. Kim, come on. You know,
yeah, I mean, Kim just, and Tony seem to have no love.
Let's just do the same thing,
yeah,
and get rid of this madman.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's the kind of player that Tony is. Up until now, he wasn't, and I'll cut a couple of points on that later. But at the same point in time, she's not going to be the next target if these people go to tribal council, because she's got 100% locked in, an ally locked in, and she's got an individual who, you know, is going on every second goose chase that you can sniff up in Tony. And I think Kim will say, well, let's do the sensible thing, and let's get rid of Tony. And maybe, like you said, it's a gold strong kind of vibe between you and me. We don't know. So, yeah, I agree. I concur everything that you're saying.
She just can't afford for this to fail. Like, if she takes a shot at Sandra and they've split the vote on Jeremy, that doesn't look good. That's not good for her to come back to camp with that. If she, like, you know, obviously votes out Tony and then leaves Sandra in with knowing about the two idols, like, I think she just like needs it to be perfect, but she also needs it to be hers. Like she talked about it. She verbalized it so well about how she just never had this amount of power in her whole playing career. And if she just votes out Tony and just uses the one idol and doesn't save Jeremy, we aren't coming out here talking about Denise. And the jury isn't going to come out talking about Denise. Much like Kelly and Dean, it would be Sandra's move. And she just couldn't let that happen. So I think that she executed it perfectly to make sure without a shadow of a doubt that she was coming back with like the power in the tribe, relationship options, and just like such a tick on the resume that, how can she must have been salivating. Well, she just knew, like, this is going to be one of the best moves ever, and it's Windows at War, and literally, how can I not?
And then at the end, she's got that thing of like, oh, I think I want to throw up, you know, very, Malcolm's idol, when he got voted out, he's like, I want to vomit. Yeah, it's like, I don't know if that was coincidental, or if she planned it, or the editors just did it, but it's a very good throwback.
Why, I need to ask for Sandra, this is the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
Why did she do this? Because it feels like this is the queen. She's an excellent player. It's not a good move. It's JT level bad. And I hate that like JT is always like the name you invoke when something like this happens, but it's true because she's even saying to her, like, I'll give you the idol next time. Like, there was so much incentive for Denise to come after her. And I don't think that they had a relationship to negate that. So why did Sandra think that Denise was just going to do her bidding just because she underestimated Denise? Did she overestimate their relationship? Did she just kind of feel like, you know, you keep your end of the bargain. That's what we're doing here, right? Like, how could she have thought this was going to work? It seems like a disaster waiting to happen.
Look, I've got a note on you, and we'll get to that later in terms of players who can change their strategy and players who can't. The one thing I would mention on Sandra's point is, you know, she's had a strategy that's worked up until now where it's always just, you know, play as low radar as you can. And this is such an unlike Sandra move. You know, trying to say, okay, you know, you need to give me X, Y, and Z, and I'll give you this. I think, and this is one of the things where, once again, I think we need to throw it back to production. You know, if Sandra had an idol that was just an idol, you know, nothing would have happened of it. Same with the Kelly Dean vote.
Yeah.
But as soon as you have a ticking time bomb where it's hot potato, where if you don't throw it now, you know, it's nothing's going to happen. Players have the incentive to start, you know, just using it for whatever reason, for funsies. And I think the difference is where Kelly used hers to save Dean just to say, oh, well, I have to make a move as idol now, or, you know, otherwise I can't make a big move. I think Sandra approached it correctly by saying, how transactional can I be with this? You know, in terms of how much blood can I get out of this rock, in terms of trying to at least get something in return. But I think the way she did it was like you mentioned now, it was incorrect. I think the better approach would have been like, yo, Denise, listen, what if I can save you tonight and we stay girl strong? You know, what if I can help you, and then, you know, it's you and me to the end. And Denise will say, and Sandra's like, listen, I got an idol. You know, if we can put 3 votes on Tony, we can send him home. I can save you tonight. Let's do that. And then we're locked in. And Denise can maybe say, well, let me let you in on a secret. I've got an idol as well. You know, I'm like, oh, great. Okay. You know, now we've got something to work with. I think that angle might have been a better angle. But I think a player like you said, Denise, who's a, not say an emotional player, but, you know, somebody who doesn't always play the game, you know, calculated mathematically, not like a cerebral player, but who plays with her heart and, like, you know, likes these one-on-one connections. I think coming from a transactional angle was maybe the incorrect approach from Sandra.
Yeah, because if she wanted to save Denise at all, I believe she could have done it. Like, it seems like Kim's not loving the craziness that Tony's bringing. Like, if she, exactly. if her intention was really to save Denise, like, there are ways to do it. She doesn't need the idol. She doesn't need to try to get fire tokens. She can probably just go to Denise and Kim and be like, we should go girl strong. Like, Tony and Jeremy clearly have a firefighter police connection, which I think she said in like a post episode scene. Also, like, they were both in Mr. Survivor, which I have to imagine connects them. Like, they're clearly connecting and she's clearly insecure about it. So if she really wanted to save Denise, and if she was really having a relationship with Denise that was in any way significant enough for Denise to not vote her out here, then there are ways she could have done that in like quite a genuine way. But saving Denise, I don't believe was like any part of her intention. Like, it was just like
something
that would need to happen in order to fulfill her other intentions, which were get fire tokens, not get blood on her hands while she broke up the Tony Jeremy threatening pair, probably by getting out Tony, who she'd been aligned with, but who she was worried about. So one thing I can tell you about Sandra for free is that Sandra does not like to take a bad deal. I know this. She's like an extreme coupon person. Like, she was probably feeling, you're right about these, like, these advantages, these time-constrained advantages are so good because it makes people make maybe some wrong decisions. You know, you talk about Kelly, and I thought that Kelly made a great move with the Dean thing until I saw her Ponderosa the next week. And in her Ponderosa, she was like, I was going to use the idol to get Dean or Jack out. And then once Dean was the target, I used it to save him. And I was like, okay, your whole intention was wrong. You were just trying to make a move for the sake of it, with no reason to do that. You know, it's not the same as, like, Denise, who's, like, been being described as, like, a bad winner by her tribe and really needs to elevate her reputation. It was just like, you're right. It's like a ticking time bomb in your pocket, except the thing about bombs is that they go off. And expiring idols don't go off. They just kind of fade into oblivion. You can use them as a fake one if you want, but people can't let that happen because they feel like they're wasting it. And Sandra would have felt like, I paid a token for this idol. I don't want it to go to waste. What can I get back on my return? Well, maybe I can, you know, pull off this flashy move, get out an opponent, not get my hands dirty, and get an extra fire token back, like, you know, than what I paid. That's a good deal. So she's trying to say, as you said, blood out of a stone. But sometimes it's better to just, like, when you're in such a good position like Sandra, you're getting to emerge so soon, you're in a majority, you're in a great position with old Decole, you're going to connect back with some old allies, you're getting to emerge where no one's going to target you for a while, even though you're literally Sandra, just as long as they ain't me, right? Like, just ride it out.
Yes, I think the angle should have been, you and me, Denise, let's go through this, you know, through thick and thin, let's stay together. But instead, like you said, you know, she was trying to see what ROI she can get on her one token investment. And unfortunately, this time, the markets weren't in her favor.
There has been the question, why didn't she put a vote on to Jeremy? Which obviously would not have made a difference because Jeremy had the idol on him. But you would think in giving someone an idol, in voting for her, and it's crazy because we'd never seen it before. We'd never seen someone vote for someone that they knew was going to be saved by an idol. And we've seen it now three times in the last year, now with Sandra, with Kelly, and with Dave from Australian Survivor. So it's cool watching that same confessional. I keep having deja vu because it's something we hadn't seen a year ago. So you would think, though, that she would put a vote on. And I think maybe the reason why, if A, she didn't think of it, or she, like, underestimated Denise hugely, which she definitely did as well, or puts too much faith in her, but also potentially if she had put a vote on Jeremy and then Denise had voted for Tony as she thought she was doing, they would all have to go back and re-vote, you know, her and Denise and Kim for one of the boys. And maybe she wanted Tony to go more, but the whole point is that she didn't want to get blood on her hands, so she would have had to vote for Jeremy. So maybe she was just leaving it to Denise to hopefully vote for Tony, to maybe vote for Jeremy, and just kind of leaving it to that. But she left herself and Kim very, very vulnerable.
You use the right word right there, Shannon, underestimate. And it's one of the things where if you all the future Survivor players out there, if you have a sense that you're going to be on the show and maybe you start, you know, messaging out here or there, one thing that everybody always tells you is don't get into a position where you feel like you are the only person that's playing and you're underestimating everybody else, because everybody else is playing the game as well and they're playing it for themselves. And I think Sandra was thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm playing this game, you know, Denise is just trying to survive. I'm really playing Survivor, and underestimated, you know, the kind of damage that could, you know, come back if this thing goes south. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, she called Denise to her face in Tribal, like, a lesser winner. And, like, yes, Tribal is theater, but, like, it's too close to the truth to be something that you can say, even if she's, like, behind the scenes working with Denise. Like, that's the kind of thing that encourages Denise to know she needs to make a big move while she has your fire token that she's promised you in her bag. Like, it just seems so obvious that she was going to do this. But I do think that a lot of that underestimation there, I think that was a running theme of the episode. The episode starts with a confessional from Ben talking about how much he hated that Boston Rob treated him like a rookie. And then he got rid of Boston Rob. And then at the Sele Tribal Council, they all spoke about how, you know, they all have different play styles and how they're all very valid. And then it ends with Sandra underestimating Denise, and Denise being described of that entire tribe as the only hyena who had more power over every single person, who was the only one who knew what was happening and who just made a better move than some of those players have ever made. And that is a high bar, let me tell you. So I think we've all learned a valuable lesson, some of us the hard way if we're Sandra, about underestimating certain players. I've learned that lesson in watching it. I thought someone like Michelle, I was like, I don't know if she'll have the skills to hang with the winners. She's been great. She's you know, run votes this season compared to this high caliber cast. And I think that you need to remember that in a season like All Winners, even if they maybe didn't show you every skill in their winning season, they have more than they've probably shown because they are someone who's good enough to win. You know, even if they're a lesser winner, they're probably one of the better players ever. So don't underestimate that, because even if you feel like that's a while away from the Mount Rushmore players, it's still amazing and it can still pull off some incredible things.
Shannon, while we are speaking about Michelle and this, can I take two minutes to share a metaphor with you? You know, I like me a metaphor, especially a tribal council. Since there's no tribal. And this is with regards to a lot of things we're seeing right now in the survivor community. If you look at something like a gym, right? let's say pre-quarantine or pre-lockdown situation. At a gym, you'll find there's a girl in her mid-20s that's at the gym. She's going to the gym because she's overweight and she wants to lose weight. There's a mom going to the gym doing cycling classes with her daughter, not because she likes cycling, but because she likes spending time with her kid. There's a guy at the gym who's a professional sports player, and, you know, that's literally his bread and butter. He needs to be as fit as possible. And then there's a 16-year-old dude who likes a girl who's now, you know, new in his class, and he realized, okay, the only way I'm going to get her is if I buff up real quick, you know, and he's there to you know, get big and impress this girl. And even though all four of those people are at the gym for different reasons, if they all pay their gym membership, each of them has the same amount of right or privilege to be there as the person next to them. Okay. And I think we're seeing a lot of this in Survivor, where every single person watches Survivor for a different reason. I mean, I, for one, I like the strategy and I like the, you know, the layered complexity of a game. And I know you have said, you know, you don't care about the human spirit. You just, you're watching it for different reasons. And
I don't.
There's a 16-year-old girl who watches Survivor because she likes it when Dante and Tyson and Dave take off his shirts and walk around, you know, in their man pants.
Hey, I'm not that's saying no to that it. Either, you know. We all contain multitudes.
Exactly. Yeah. And every single person has a different reason for watching Survivor. And I think we've got into a space where you mentioned now Michelle and this and lesser person. It's very easy to go and when this let's say this 16-year-old girl who likes Dave, when she wakes up on Sunday and she posts a picture of Dave and she's like, yeah, Dave's the best Survivor player ever. I love this guy, you know? To come from left field and insult her on Instagram or Twitter or whatever and tell her, oh, he's the worst, you know, people like him and Dante, they're losers and everyone win the game, yada, yada. I mean, that just detracts from what the reason why we're all watching Survivor. And it's such a great game because within a family, every single person can find something that they like watching. And at the same time, every single person can find a winner that they appreciate. And I think a lot of the stuff that's happening on social media right now is people just openly shaming, you know, you voted out my favorite, so you're an X, Y, or Z, or why did you do this? You're such a, you know, and people get really, really mean. And I'm going to tell them, guys, why? We're all in this for different reasons. We all have the same show. We all paid our gym membership. Let's just enjoy this.
So, I didn't know where the gym thing was going. Not going to lie.
No, I just want to put that out there because, I mean, we've seen a lot of this, especially now, I think, with a lockdown where people are in the house and they're frustrated and they just like, you know, they just want to rant on somebody. But, guys, we're always like watching the same show. Let's just keep it cool. Let's just understand why we're here, why we sat down to watch the first episode, why we're sitting down to watch it now, and let's just appreciate the show for what it is. I just want to get it off my chest.
Yeah, a lot of people have been sending hate to, like, Wendell we'll talk about, which is so disgusting and, like, definitely don't be doing that. I mean, I don't think these listeners are. I think it's probably trolly teenagers. Yeah. But I think, like, in terms of, like, how we appreciate and value the show, like, I think that if you're listening to this podcast and if you're in the community, I feel like we're such a minority that we feel the need to defend that style of play. Like, not in a mean way, but just like, I think that the vast majority of people watch the show for the challenges and everything like that. And we just look at it a different way, but we feel like that way is maybe not kind of validated by the show or kind of the culture of the larger culture, not the superfan culture, but the larger culture of the show, because it is very much like I got a comment, I tweeted about Sandra's legacy, which I want to talk about. And someone responded like, maybe she should have played the game and not sat out of challenges. And I literally laughed for 3 minutes. Like, how can you, like, this is the kind of thing where it's like, and any of the attacking is bad. You know, I've said it on the Australian Survivor podcast, when I see people attacking Abby for just being about the physical stuff, it makes me feel as bad as when I see casuals attacking Michelle for being like more of a talker. Like, I totally agree. Any of the negativity is bad, but you do hope that this is a mental game so much of the time, and you hope that that's valued to a large audience. And it's not like, well, they suck because they're not doing well at challenges. And you're like, that's like a minor part of the game. Even if it's something you value, at least try and see that the strategy is like a big part of this. But that's kind of like a tangent. I do want to talk about Sandra's legacy as well, because, you know, Parvati, she goes home in a pretty fairly standard way, swap screwed. Not in a good position, not a lot she could do unless maybe buying that challenge advantage. But Sandra goes out in a big way. You know, she makes a big mistake, something I don't want to have to evoke JT's name, but we've done it in this podcast. Does that hurt the her legacy of the queen for you?
I would say no. I mean, it's if you take a sport like, and take any sport, take Formula One. Let's take Formula One. If you look at like the really old school Formula One guys who like drove in the 60s, right? Those vehicles were like super slow compared to now. I mean, most cars now can, you know, outdrive the Formula One car in the like the 60s. Maybe I'm wrong. Then come after me on social media. Will you say that somebody who won, eight seasons in a row in the 60s in the Formula One is a lesser driver than somebody now? I would say no. I think in that time when he played, that dude was a legend. You know, he won X amount of Formula Ones in a row. And if you look at like really old school tennis, you know, they played it at all wooden rackets. Now it's a whole different game. You can say that for any sport. So I think you must always go and see what happened in this vacuum at that person, how that person played in that time. Because now it's like when you play like a chess simulation or a game that can program chess moves. Sure, Garry Kasparov is playing against Deep Blue, but because Deep Blue has all the chess games ever played into his memory, he's essentially playing against all these other players as well, including himself, right? And Sandra pioneered the game in a way that we've never seen before. And now all these new people, they played the game, yeah, but they've also watched Sandra play and they've seen the way she's playing the game. So they're playing against her, but they've got this whole history of how she's played and how everybody else has played and how trying to make the best move. So if they make a better move now, it doesn't mean that Sandra made an incorrect move in Pearl Islands or Heroes versus Villains when she won the game. And I think that's something where we have to draw the line instead of saying, okay, I'm just going to, you know, go after this person because, oh, you won once, but now you got out voted first. Oh, Natalie, you suck. No, the people who play now have her initial game built in and they're making big moves now, which she might have pioneered. You know, she might have been, ahead of a curve 10 or 15 or 20 seasons ago. And I think that's something which a lot of people, especially, I hate to say this, younger people who just get onto Survivor now, they're like, oh, well, who the hell are these clowns? Why are you liking Boston Rob or whatever? But when you're watching these people as a kid play the game, you realize, wow, they really were like legends and they've changed the way the game is now. And the reason why the game is dynamic right now is because of players like them.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a good move. I do think they were like extenuating circumstances. I think that she got greedy, you know, like she was so set, you know, secure in her position. She was so greedy to try and get these fire tokens. Like she could have kept it simple, but she did get greedy. And it's funny, we've never seen someone at the final five when the idol's about to expire try to make some crazy move that goes wrong. Like, they usually play it on themselves. Someone like Verna and obviously Natalie have made big moves with it, but only with perfect information. And maybe that's just circumstantial, or maybe it's just like that late in the game, there's self-preservation. But I think that more and more, as we see these expiring advantages, we are going to see people make moves out of their best interest, because this long from the end of the game, it does kind of feel like, I can't believe this is going away. I haven't used it, which should be a good thing. Like, I haven't needed the idol. Yay me. I'm in a good enough position for that. But I think people think, like, how can I extend it for as long as possible in some sort of power? And I think that they can work against, you know, their best interest by seeing it like a grenade rather than just something that will, like, gently pass and, you know, be a fake idol in their pocket. But it did really validate for me that before the season, I was like, I'm not going to lose the legacy of any of these players. I don't care if they go early. I don't care if they make a terrible move. I don't care if they're a goat at the end. I mean, that's the one I haven't seen yet, so TBD. But for the players that have gone early and for Sandra...
Or a hyena at the end.
Yeah, that's what we're calling it now. But, like, for Sandra, who's made a move this bad, and for, like, the first eight players who've gone out earlier, like, I've lost nothing, because I just feel like, you know, it was going to happen to some people. It's in a very, very, you know, extremely difficult cast, extremely difficult season. I don't see it as worse. Like, it is a blight, you know, on the resume, but it doesn't actually take away from the legacy. The same way it's like Tyson is obviously a great player, and he also made a mistake, and it was also a bad move. Like, great players sometimes make bad moves, and that's what happened here. It does not diminish the legacy for me, so I'm not really sure that anything will. But I do think people can elevate their legacy, because there's a fair few players on the season that have gone even higher up for me. So that's where I'm willing to move, but not down.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's inevitable that some, you know, we're going to have 19 losers at the end of the season. And does that detract from every one of them winning the season? Absolutely not. So,
yeah,
I agree with you.
But some of them lose in, like, pretty big ways, which this was, but even so. And speaking of what I'm fearing will be a loss next week, I want to get into the rest of Dakar. What happened, Tony? What happened this week? Like, it was going so well. It was, like, the best edit. We did worry he was going to be advantage getend, which he wasn't. But I didn't love that he was, like, hiding in... I mean, I love the spy bunker. I did love it. But, like, strategically, it concerned me that no one liked that. That he was, like, leaving the conversations, taking away all his influence in this tiny tribe. Like, putting off Kim, who he's meant to be aligned with. It was so obvious he was gone. They were like, don't talk by the well, because it will obviously be by the well. And it was by the well. It was, like, not good, Edgic. I don't feel good about Tony now.
Yeah, look, I think Tony must open his playbook, and he must just, you know, cross out that spy bunker plan. It was insane the first time he did it, but I don't think it's going to work anymore. I mean, all these people know it. If you know it and I know it, then, you know, obviously Sandra's going to know about it. So, yeah, I think Tony, like you said, up until now, you know, he was cool, calm, and collected. But he traded the triple C's in for a different set of triple C's, which is the crazy, chaotic, and cuckoo Tony, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what we don't want to see. So I think
cuckoo's with a K.
Is it? I don't know.
I think so.
Well, sorry for my poor grammar. It's English not my first language. But we've seen Tony... you know, being so close to just a normal guy who's calling Gladys and having fun, not looking around for idols. And I think it's one of those things where, like I mentioned earlier, you want a tag to unite the majority against the minority. As soon as he starts up this crazy antics engine, people are going to be like, oh, you know, old Tony's back, got to get rid of him. And I think it's, that's probably his worst move that he could have done. You should have just, you know, stayed with the crew and be like, yo, Kim, I'm scared. Help me out. But yeah, I think that kind of move, that kind of mindset is one you do when there's eight or six people left in your game, where you're like, well, I don't have any other move. I'm just going to take this idol, hang around my neck, walk into tribal council and see what happens, you know? But if you do that with 40 people left in the game, they're going to be like, oh, what the hell are you doing? Let's just get rid of you.
Yeah.
So
14 people when he's in the majority, though, as well. Like, how bad would it be if he was actually in trouble?
Exactly. So if he's in trouble, then, you know, do that, disappear. But if you're, yeah, just show your face, be cool, and, play a safe game.
You know it's not good when his cover story was like, I was frantically looking for idols, because that's, like, better than, like, I was in the spy bunker. And it's, like, it's hard because... he's spent so long changing people's perception. Like Yul said, I thought Tony would be an asshole. Sarah said, like, I knew that they just needed to get to know Tony. Like, he's worked so hard to pull away that perception of him to be, as you described, like, somewhat a normal person, like, close to a normal person. And he undid it so quickly.
How cool is Sandra and he's like, I don't know what they call it, like, cop handshake when they do that thing. I've tried doing it with Haley. It's not as easy as it looks, but I think you're completely right. It's if this gets heard by the Gape fam that Tony's up to his old antics, I think we can have it's an expiry day thanks to his name for sure.
Yeah, I do think, like, as a general rule, more ladders, fewer shacks. But I do also think,
yes,
like, shacks and
yes,
ladders is a new
ladders,
game.
More ladders, fewer shacks. That will also be the hashtag of this podcast.
No, I think shacks and ladders. That's the new game. Instead of snakes and ladders, Tony should market that, and he should sell it. And knowing Tony, that's something that he would do. But, like, the ladder stuff was perfect. It was funny. It showed, like, his crazy side, but, like, in a very, like, endearing, non-threatening way. And the shack is, like, the opposite, or the bunker. Like, it's just, like, it's like the most sneaky thing. And it also doesn't have any like strategic benefit. Whereas the ladder has strategic benefit because it makes people like you. More ladders, fewer shacks. Shacks and ladders all the time. I'm going with it. I want that game. Just like I love exploding kittens. What about Jeremy? We've spoken about Kim because I was impressed with Jeremy in this episode.
Yeah, I think Jeremy is an individual who, I want to say, he understands the concept of stay with the numbers, stay with the majority, wait until they merge, and then you act. You know, that kind of game plan. And I think we've seen him done it almost correctly once, and we've seen him execute it to perfection the second time he played. And for him, I mean, him saying, well, if it's me or Denise, I'll write on her name. You know, if you're Jeremy, that's the right word, that's the right thing to say, because now three people believe you, and you know, you tell Denise, listen, you know, it is what it is. She's saving you, so he's got his bread butter on both sides right now, where Denise is with him, but the other people, you know, have taken him to be a straight shooter. So I think Jeremy's in a good spot. I think he's low on numbers, but I think there are bigger threats left in the game where he can cruise by up until a point where it's time to, like, you know, okay, then it's going to be, how do you manage this merge from 10 to 6. And I think that's going to be his most challenging section of the game, for sure.
Yeah, I'm hoping this Tony-Jeremy thing makes it to the merge and is prevalent, because they're two of my absolute favorites. I just think, like, it's crazy that there were four votes coming on to Denise, not Jeremy. It's right before a merge. You could take out a huge threat like Jeremy then. He's a huge physical threat as well. I applaud the fact that he voted for Denise. As I said, I don't think it means anything, but it's good self-preservation. They didn't even put another vote on him. I don't know how much it's just like that's on them, or more just that they don't want to fracture that relationship with Jeremy. Is he that well integrated? Because I think all of this is really great. And obviously he's essential enough to Denise that she does want to save him. His read was good enough to not use the safety without power. If he was really, really sure that they weren't going to be splitting votes on him, he could never predict that Denise would play an idol on him, but if he was really sure that they weren't going to be splitting votes and it was probably going to be Denise, and even if she had an idol, she wasn't coming for him, then, like, yeah, he shouldn't have played it. And I think that he's now got that, you know, still in his back pocket. I feel like he's really not quick on the draw, even though that was his confessional.
Yeah, that was the episode title.
Yeah, but he always plays his advantages correctly, and, like, they're always helpful to him, and he's never done it wrong before, so I don't know why he said that, unless it was just, like, good content. But I was impressed with him in this episode.
Concur 100%.
Constantly impressed with Jeremy, actually. I want to move to Sele a little bit. We've spoken about the poverty thing, what she could have done. I want to talk about Wendell and Michelle, because I found this so interesting, this dynamic, where Michelle is like, why do I always have to give to Wendell? Like, firstly, he's the one who took from me in the relationship. I was the hurt party, which I don't really feel like, unfortunately, matters in this situation. Because he has all the power. I think that's what Michelle was missing from this dynamic, which is like, I give, give, give. He takes, takes, takes. It's like, yeah, because you need him and he doesn't need you. Like, he's in more power in this tribe. He has more power in the game. He has more allies at the merge. You think you're giving him poverty, that you're, like, willing to let her go, but really your vote's unimportant. Like, whatever you do, Michelle, like, she's either going home 4-1 or 3-2. Like, it's kind of irrelevant. What he's giving you is your life in the game, and instead he's making sure his group are voting for poverty. Whether that's based on him or just the fact that poverty is a bigger threat, kind of irrelevant. Like, you're actually getting more from him than he is from you at this stage. And you're just in a much weaker position than him. So that's kind of why you have to grovel to him, because he's in a bigger and more important game position.
Yeah, it's one of the things, and I don't fully understand why there's so much hate towards Wendell at the moment, especially like we said on social media. I mean, if you look back, and I've watched the episode twice, if you look at it the second time, Wendell is doing what he's saying. He is shooting straight. He's like, okay, poverty, we're coming for you. If you can help me, give me a name. You know, and everything he's saying, he's playing that I'm just going to be real with you. Let's see how far this gets me game, which is completely different to up until, you know, his Ghost Island game up until now, where he was like, I've got this streak and this streak. You know, you choose an idol, I'll play the second one for myself. You know, that kind of flashiness where, you know, he's splashing it out. He's really playing a straight up game, saying, you know, this is what you see is what you get. You know, I'm going to build you guys in our shelter and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Why are you all, you know, slinging hate my way? So I do think I don't understand the reason for the negativity towards Wendell's game. And one thing I want to add while we're here now, is I think a lot of the players this season who are playing well are people who are able to adapt their game in the correct way. If you look at Denise, you know, saying instead of being a passenger, I'm going to be the pilot. If we look at Ben saying, instead of running around for idols, I'm going to build these root connections, something I've never done before. Wendell now saying, instead of getting one person and you know, the two of us conning all of you, I'm just going to be real with you. It's just something we've never seen before. And the people who we've lost up until now, not everyone, but a lot of them are people who have diverted to the old ways of playing. We see Rob saying, okay, well, you know, everybody's on lockdown, nobody's allowed to talk. We've seen Poverty, we'll get to it now, saying, okay, I'm going to try and manipulate you, instead of saying, you know, how can I barter this? So I think an individual who will win this game is an individual who will adapt this game in the correct way going forward that will be different from the first way he or her played, but at the same time, it'll be an effective strategy, not changing it for the negative and not just playing the same game this time around.
Yeah, and I would love for that to be Denise, someone like Denise who played a super social game at a time where social games were more valued, and now has played a really flashy move, but it's not just flashy for the sake of it. I mean, if it is for the sake of it, it's for a relevant sake of it, because that is important with the jury. But it's not just like meaningless flash. You know, she's using her intuition, she's using like her emotional intelligence and her just general intelligence to make that move to build on the social skills. And to me, it's like that doesn't just show adaption in her gameplay. Like that also shows that the game is evolving and she's kind of evolving with it, but in a way that's like still retains all of those values that I have for the game and that I really admire in Denise. So that would be a fun, you know, evolution, and that would be a really fun game to reward with a win. And if it's not Denise, I do hope that it is one of the other players who can show a similar evolution and still retain the things we love about their game, but, you know, but evolve it. Like even with Ben, the social relationships, he's saying, okay, I can help you look for idols. Like he's still keeping his skill, but he's evolving it.
Exactly. And I think and maybe I'm jumping the gun now, but I think that's one of the reasons why I think Poverty, you know, got knocked out this round is Poverty's game has always been this like, you're going to be my monkey, I'm going to tie myself to you, I'm going to flirt a little bit, and I'm going to make you feel special. And that has got her close to the end so many times. But now you're playing with people who, you know, they're seeing right through that. You know, that's not going to fly. So instead of changing a game, she tried to do that same thing with Nick. And it's like, yeah, she was my ice crush, but I'm not buying it. Where I think either, like we mentioned earlier, Poverty at the challenge, she could have gone and said, you know, okay, let's buy the advantage. It's a 2-for-1 special. Or saying, okay, you know, doing a 180 and saying, I'm going to now be a transactional player who plays this game cerebrally and logically, and use game theory and say, what is the best move for me? What is the best move for you? Let's get to a consensus. I mean, she had 3 tokens to barter with. And even Jeff said this in his post-episode thing. He's like, he wants to ask her, why didn't she? She had so many,
and you know,
she's got a nullifier and 3 idols. She's not even a billionaire. She's a gazillionaire in terms of advantages in the game. Why not go to Wendell and be like, yo, okay, Wendell, this is what I have. I've got 3 idols. I've got nullifier. What can we do to let this happen? You know, now she almost like, say, quote unquote, fizzled out, you know, just, okay, you know, voted out because she wasn't willing to put down a name of tribal, wasn't willing to come to a concrete deal and saying, this is all the power I can give you, you know. Yeah, just hold this for a second and feel how three fire tokens and nullifier feels in your hands. You want this? Let's make a deal. And I think, like I said, all the players have changed their game. And I think Parvati was a bit reluctant or a bit slow, not as quick on the draw, to change the game. And I think, unfortunately, this time around.
I don't know how much it would have helped because that three are so tight. Like, there's no reason for any of them to flip. Like, even going into tribal, I was like, the thing that gives us 0.5% chance of working is that, like, Parvati can be that good. But, like, otherwise, there's just no way. Like, even, like, were they ever open to it? Because even Wendell, like, it's funny that she was taking what he was saying to his allies to try and throw him under the bus, because his allies would be like, so you're telling me that Wendell wouldn't give you a name and also would only take the tokens before tribal council? Like, he's clearly giving you nothing. Like, he's not even attempting to pretend to play with you. Like, he's clearly just, like, saying things for the sake of it in the hope of getting something out of you, with, like, actually giving you nothing. And, like, it was nothing and really that incriminating for his allies at all. So I don't know how helpful it would have been. If I'm thinking if there was one thing she could have done, I think maybe Michelle. Like, throw Michelle under the bus with your tokens. You know, use that too. Like, hey, it's me or Michelle. Let me tell you, I just watched Boston Rob get voted out. That was my last ally in the game. It was Ethan and Boston Rob. I don't have any other allies, especially if you vote out Michelle. Michelle has Jeremy, has Ben, has Denise, you know, to a point has Adam. Like, she was running things. I wasn't running things on the old CLA. So you vote out Michelle instead of me. If we go back to Tribal Council, obviously then I'm gone. I have fire tokens that I will give you after I come back. Like, that's what I would, maybe then. I don't see them voting out each other, like, their key allies. As we said, allies are more important than advantages and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't see them voting out each other, but maybe if it's like, Michelle's actually a bigger threat than I am. I know I'm Parvati, so it's counterintuitive, but she actually is, if you sell it hard enough. And I have an alpha I'll give you, or I have a token I'll give you. Hey, I've got three tokens. You each get one, you vote out Michelle. What about that?
Exactly, and I think this is one you mentioned on another fire. I mean, who's the first person whose alliance used an alpha fire correctly? Nick, right? Mm-hmm. When they didn't have a physical life. So why not go to Nick? And we mentioned Wendell. And I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with you. I'm saying I think maybe Wendell is not the right target in terms of her, you know, twisting your arm game, which is the game Parvati plays. Why not go to Nick? You know, he's already told you you were his high school crush. You know, Nick's life was flashy game. His first confessional of the season was, the person who's going to win the season is going to get all the fire tokens. Oh, the person who uses fire tokens best. Why not go to Nick and be like, yo, Nick, do you like advantages? You're a new school kind of player. I'm old school. I don't need this. What about this? And you just empty your whole, like, treasure chest in front of him. Like, Nick, if you're willing to work with me, this is what I can give you. I'm sure that would have been an insane pitch to Nick, where Wendell would have been like, yeah, Bob, I'm safe for you. Where Nick would have been like, whoa, idol advantages. This is going to happen. And I think that might have been her best way to work on Nick, but use these advantages. You know, use the lingo that Nick likes to work with. You know, use words like nullify and advantage, and you know, fire token. We got all this kind of tricks. Nick, are you in? And once again, I'm not there, but I think Nick would have been. You know, he would have been salivating looking at that. You know, all those tokens and advantages that he would have given her. So I just think maybe once again, I think maybe it's not that she made the incorrect move. Maybe she didn't choose the right target. Maybe she should have approached Nick and be like, yo, Nick, come with us. I can give you all of this and you can be the king, you know?
I think that there's an argument to be made to each of them or to all of them, you know, because you assume that the merge is coming next. It's not, but you could still win that challenge. If you're not buying the challenge advantage, which is, I think, the best bet, you have to be, like, yes. You could go to any of them. Hey, Yule, like, we know each other. We've played together. Look at how all the old schoolers are going. Let's change the culture. Take out Michelle.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm not asking you to take out Nick, because you're not going to do that. That would be crazy. Take out Michelle, and I'll give you a fire token. To Nick, yeah, the nullifier has a special place in your heart. Take out Michelle, we work together, and, you know, your high school dreams are coming true. Wendell, you want some fire tokens? I'll give you the fire tokens after I make it through the tribal council, and we'll vote out Michelle. Not sure if you've noticed, but she's your ex-girlfriend and it is super awkward. So like, there's something in it for you. Like, I think like she can go to all of them and be like, I can be a benefit to you, or Michelle is threatening to you and I'll give you some stuff. Like, she had a lot to offer, but I can't believe that she wasn't even, from what we saw, she wasn't even turning on Michelle, because we saw Michelle going to Wendell and offering up Parvati,
yeah.
Which is the right move, you know, and she does end up voting for, she votes with Parvati. And I'm kind of wondering why, like, did she think that their plan was going to work, or could she not bring herself to do it emotionally, or like, was she just trying to get the fire tokens? Is it a combination of all of those things? I don't know.
I think Michelle is in a good position in this case, where if she votes Parvati and Parvati gets voted out anyway, she can be like, yo, I tried to get a fire token. Like I told you, she didn't give it to me. Sorry. Or if Nick does decide to flip, she can be like, boom, let's get rid of Wendell, my ex-boyfriend, who I don't want to live with. So I think for her, it's a very low-risk, high-reward kind of game, voting for Parvati, voting for Wendell. So I think, you know, she's got both bases covered, where whatever the result is, she can go back and justify that action. I think her move is you know, she saves herself on both fronts. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad move. Instead, I think in the it's very different from the Denise Jeremy vote, where we're like, well, it's definitely going to be one of you two. Turn on one another, even though you're closest allies. Yeah, I think she's got nothing to lose by writing down Wendell's name, because she's got an alibi for the reason she did it. And if it did go through, if Nick did flip, you know, great for her. She's in the majority now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate that at all. Like, I just think she's in a safe spot because she knows it's going to be Parvati, just because it is Parvati. And it seemed so open who the two targets were, which was a little crazy in case there was an idol, that these veterans were not blindsiding anyone. Like, the targets were very open. The one thing I don't like about it is that she tells Wendell her plan. She's like, I want to vote for you to get fire tokens. Like, why would he let her, why would he want her to do that? Like, what is he, like, it's not like, I'm going to vote with her to get fire tokens and then I'm giving them to you. It's like, I want fire tokens for me. Like, he'd be like, well, that's not helpful to me. Like, you're not even in my alliance and you offer me nothing other than just like, nothing. She's not even voting for Parvati. Like, what is she offering him at that point? Other than just, no, literally nothing. Like, she's voting for him. She's taking her own fire tokens. She's not in a powerful position enough to do this. So I don't think she needs to go to him and say that, because that's just alienating. If anything, she should be like, guys, I voted with Parvati because I just emotionally could not bring myself not to, like, kind of be that, like, you know, damsel in distress, lead into that, even if it's not true. But now I want to work with you guys. Like, they're not going to hold it against her that she couldn't vote against her ally, I don't think. Like, I don't think that's going to make any real difference. She would get the fire tokens, obviously. Like, I don't see it as make or break her voting for Parvati. I just don't know why she would go to Wendell and tell him, like, her strategic reasons, when it can look just like an emotional decision, even like a bad decision, and that makes them underestimate her even more. But I honestly think her relationship with Wendell is, like, way too open. Like, the fact that they've dated, she said, like, the way they talk to each other, like, it's too real. It's not how you should be playing in this game. Like, she shouldn't be divulging that much information to someone who's on a different side to her, even if he is her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, I think from Michelle's point of view, your last point is very accurate, Shannon, divulging information. I think in her mind, it's a matter of, and I don't want to get too much into this, you know, they dated, you know, who was right, who was wrong. That's, if we're speaking about why in the gym, why we're watching the show, this kind of stuff, this reality TV, who dated who, it's like the lowest tier of why I watch television.
What? It's so entertaining, Jacques. You're watching wrong.
No, I'm not supposed to say that,
but you are watching wrong.
I could not care less about who has dated who in real life. But I think from Michelle's point of view, if you put it in her shoes, it's a matter of rather the devil I know than the devil I don't. You know, I've been to Wendell's house. I know what food he likes. You know, I'd rather work with this guy than this girl who, you know, I just met her on the show. Or I've seen her once or twice in an event. So like, yo, and even like you hear the way she speaks to him. She calls him in like, babe or something
she
like
calls,
that.
Like, that's just the way she talks, to be fair. Like, I think that
maybe,
that's just her way of
But maybe it's like a muscle memory from, you know, when they dated. Like, hey, babe, you know, let's just vote. I can get a fire token. So I think from her, I think she's just more comfortable around him than being around a person she doesn't know, just because they have had that long history, or not long, but even though it ended badly for her, it's more familiar than this, you know, I don't know these other people.
Yeah,
but that's just my take. I'm just coming from, like I say, what I would do if I'm in her situation.
Yeah. I mean, well, Wendell, like, I also don't get the hate against him just because that's terrible. But, like, less than the hate, what I don't get is, like, his supporters are like, oh, it's clearly just a bad edit. Like, I didn't think he came across that badly. Like, probably don't be that openly cutthroat. He obviously, like, came across as, like, a little cocky. He probably can go more with being, like, the more laid-back guy, which is his persona as well. But, like, people are like, oh, even he said he's the villain. And it's like, I can't believe, maybe I'm just, I like Wendell. Like, I didn't take it as that negative. I just think he's like, that's, I don't think it's the right strategic approach, and he probably could have had a softer approach, and you don't have to go into tribal council talking about how you're going to knife people every which way. I just didn't like, even he seems to think it was like really villainous, and like, I just didn't see that. But, you know, just an interesting take from the whole entire internet in a very somewhat ugly way by some people.
Yeah, I think Wendell is got a lot of swag. You know, he's got the toothpick, and I think one thing here, like I mentioned earlier, he was very direct. You know, he was like, "This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm saying. I'm being really honest, and you're not taking that on face value." And I mean, I've been in that position where when I was like, "Guys, this is everything I have. I'm being real with you. This is, I've given you everything I have. There's nothing more." And the players in the game still, you know, does not believe that or you know, take that in negative light. So I can fully understand why the players and maybe the audience perceives it that way. I think, you know, Wendell's doing good, and I think he's like I said, he's playing with confidence because that's the way he plays the game. He had a lot of advantages and tricks up his sleeve. Even though he is keeping it real with the people, he's got confidence, and I think some people mistake that confidence for arrogance, and that's why he's getting so much hate, which I 100% disagree with. I mean, these people are real individuals. They've got they've got wives and family and kids and parents at home who's also reading this, you know, vitriol that you're spewing at them, and I don't think that's justified or right.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we are back. All right, we have analyzed this episode quite a bit, but I want to get to the chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting
kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1. Okay, so 3 points should surprise no one. That I'm going to give it to Denise for all the reasons we've said, times a million.
This is brand new information.
I wish I could give her 30 cheesy points because I loved it so much. So that goes without saying. 2 points to Jeremy for the reasons, again, that I've said. I think he did great. And I'm going to give a point to someone we've barely mentioned on this podcast. Maybe surprising. I'm going to give it to Ben. Because
Whoa,
last week...
To Ben?
Yes, to Ben. Because last week when I was on the Know-It-Alls with Rick Devens, I said... This move to take out Rob is the right move for one person. The person who can kind of get through and be that third with Sarah and with Sophie. And for the other person who isn't the third, who's the fourth, well, you're on the chopping block and you might not make it to the merge. And it seems from Ben's perspective and from Adam's perspective that it was Ben who made the right move and that Adam is more in trouble. So I kind of want to credit him for that. Even though we barely saw Yara, we saw them for like a minute before the challenge. Also was I'm way too amped up to be thinking about these things in the moment. But in hindsight, it was pretty obvious that Yara were going to win the challenge when they were the only tribe shown before the challenge. But I want to credit Ben there. It's hard for me to credit anyone from Sele because I just feel like there's maybe more that could have been done from Parvati. I don't love that Michelle had that conversation with Wendell, even though I don't mind how she voted. Whereas like Wendell and Yule and Nick all just did the obviously right thing with a really good swap position. I credit Nick a little bit. I want to give him an honorable mention for being approachable, but obviously Wendell and Yule were more closed off from what we heard, but it's not enough for a point for me. And I'm also going to give an honorable mention to Kim as well for all the reasons we've stated. Kim is amazing. So those are my points.
Correct. Yeah. Like, as you know, Shannon, I don't care about the chizzy. It's just a simple thing anyways.
You check me about it like daily. Where are my chizzy points? Why didn't I get chizzy points when I butted my shirt back up? I know it still haunts you.
I still get nightmares about that. No, I'm clowning.
I love that the chizzy can impact people though. So I'm not that sad you're traumatized.
The chizzy is the metric of my happiness, you know.
Same.
I think I was runner up in our season with chizzy points, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
You know, you don't think, because you stare at that chart day in, day out. Don't deny it.
I do. I print it out whenever a new one gets updated. And my home is now that new Chizzy account on Twitter. That's my new home page. So whenever I open up my browser, you know, I go straight to the Chizzy Twitter account.
I respect it.
100% agree with you. 3 points to Denise. Goofy Girl, what's her name? Goofy Girl 1183 or something like that on Twitter.
I don't know.
I must look this up now.
I know it's Goofy Girl. I don't know all the numbers and everything.
Goofy Girl 1171. I don't know why it's 1171. There's probably a reason for that.
I don't know why it's Goofy Girl. Like, we have so many questions about this.
She's probably the least goofy girl in the world. But Denise, taking 3 points. Like you said, for all the reasons we mentioned. 2 points. I'm going to give my 2 points for Kim. I think sitting in a tribal council, seeing two people playing idols, you know, it's now between three people, you know, you can be one of them, having an idol and not playing it. I think that's quite a nerves of steel. So I'll give my 2 points to Kim. I'm going to retroactively or posthumously give one to Parvati.
Okay.
I know she didn't execute this plan correctly in terms of how to use idols, but I think if you ask any sensible Survivor player with knowledge of the players, and you said Parvati gets out with 12 people left in the game, they were like, nope, I will take the odds off below that, thank you. I think the fact that she, of all these big names, like we've mentioned earlier, has survived probably the last big name left in the game. Tony, maybe. Yeah, you're right. But the fact that she could get this far into the game, I don't think she's coming back from extinction. I think there are people who are better at individual challenges than her. And that's not her game. But I think the fact that she could get so deep into the game, I think a lot of people would have said, well, I'll sign on the dotted line for a poverty 12th place finish. That's okay with me. I think she surpassed most people's expectations in terms of how deep she can get into returning player season with the huge illuminating target that was painted across her back. So that's my 1 point.
Well, I love all those players. I love all these players. So the Chizzy is just like a joy to get to honor the winners. I mean, think about the people you just gave votes to. You just gave votes to Denise, Kim, and Parvati, who are all in a season together. And it is the only light in my week at the moment. So
Had Tony not go building a spy strike again, I think he would have, you know, he's an honorable mention.
Well, not for this episode, but for the season up until this very point.
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah, up until now, you know, it's the same criteria. If you could tell people Tony will be there up until the last vote before the merge, people would have been like, boom, I'm in. Let's see more Tony on our screen. And up until now, he's been great comic relief, and he's been, you know, a great gem on our TV. So I'm glad for every second of Tony that we have.
Completely agree. Please make it to the merge, Tony. Please, I need this. Like, genuinely, Tony voice, this is huge, and I need it. Like, I need him to stay. We have a couple of questions from the listeners that we haven't got to in this recap somehow. Derek Winchester asks, when giving the idol to Denise, do the rules include that Sandra has to explain how long the idol is valid for? If not, can players not use the time-limited expired advantages as fake to gather numbers in dire circumstances?
Oh, 100% she does not have to explain it.
And she didn't, right? We didn't see her to say
it's only good tonight. No, exactly. And I think you and I have spoken about this with Mike Bloom on when in our season when Durao got a one-time idol, and it looked exactly like all the other ones. It was a key, it was a metallic thing, it was an iron-cast object. There's no way you can fabricate that. And I think production introduced that with the idea that, you know, now this, whoever got it, I mean, they don't know who's going to be chosen, has a tool to bargain with deep into the season. Now, we know in our season it didn't work out that way because Durao didn't want to do it. But I think production, like, hopes that people, you know, fabricate or give a half truth on what that advantage can be, so that people can use it down the line, definitely.
Yeah. Well, and like that's just, like it's a Tony move, right? Like Tony pretended the Tyler Perry idol was good through four. Like that is your prerogative to lie about the rules.
Exactly. Exactly.
And sometimes it's unfair because it's rules that production hasn't told all the players about, which they should always do because people should be on an even playing field, and that just makes the game more fair and more interesting of how people work within it. But like if they don't tell you everything, and if you do have an expired advantage, like you can definitely use it as a fake, and you can lie about how useful it is. So we don't know if Sandra gave Denise all the information, and if she didn't, like even more so, that's how much like Denise should not have been working with Sandra, because Sandra's not trying to be genuine with her, not trying to be truthful with her. Like she's, we could see she was like, I'll give you this idol. She never said it's only good tonight. Like, you know, it made it seem like even more like, well, is Sandra giving me a full idol? What is she trying to get out of this? You know, like that is a lot.
Exactly.
More than it even
and
was.
I think this is exactly what production want. When they build a season like this with all these, and I know people are, you know, there's people in the gym who are totally opposed to advantages, and there are people in the gym who absolutely love advantages. I get both sides, but I think
I'm just not in the gym. I'm not in either of those gyms or in any gym
ever. But in terms of these advantages expiring or working only under certain criteria, I think that gives the players in the game a bit of carte blanche to say, how can I use this to manipulate the people around me? And good players, I mean, look at last season, Rob, when he went to Outer Secrets, he got nothing. If you can, you know, sell that in a way that people buy it, you know, great for you.
Yeah, Rob's perfect. Like, he made up his own advantage, and it was a game-winning fake advantage. So, yeah, what you can do with that information, like what Tony did in Kageyan, can often be more valuable than the advantage itself. So you definitely don't have to be truthful with it at all.
No, for sure not. And production is never going to stop you. It's like, sorry. That guy's lying to you. No, but let these guys roll with it, you know?
Yeah.
I think when it becomes tricky, it's like, sorry, just to add on to this, like you mentioned Rob now, is he mentioned the, you can see a vote before it works. Now, if you're going like, hey, yo, Nico, how does this work? You know, then I think you put the host in a spot like, well, Rob should explain. I'm not going to, you understand what I'm saying? I think then maybe, but if you're not going to, you know.
Verify, but they wouldn't verify for you, right?
No.
The host and production would just be like, shrug emoji? I don't know.
Yeah, play the game. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Yeah. I do think there's been too many advantages. Like, that's the gym that I'm in. It's like, I want some, and this move was awesome and super fun. I do think they probably should have like either sold them or hid them. It's just been a lot. Advantage get in could have happened. Even if you put a nullify in, they go to a different tribe with these tiny tribes. Advantage get in was a very real, very pressing threat. So people, like, I think because I speak so loudly about, I don't want fire at Final Four. I don't want that many advantages. Like, I don't want Edge of Extinction. People are like, they tend to put me with the back to basics thing, and I don't want to go back to basics, and I've never said I want to. I just don't want there to be advantage get-ins. Like, I just don't want more idols and people in a tribe. That's all I'm asking. And no Edge of Extinction.
I'm actually asking a lot.
And no Fire at Four. Like, no, it doesn't have to go back to basics. Like, I like late 20s era advantages and that level of mechanisms. I feel like that's not that crazy to ask.
I agree with you, Shannon. I think one thing where, if I could just weigh in, I think if you look at something like Redemption Island, you know, Rob found an idol, or even Kim's season, she found an idol. She never played it throughout the season. And, you know, Kim probably hanging in her house above a fireplace as a souvenir. And at the same time, we've had pre-merge tribal councils where three idols got played. So production introduces it, and sure, they've got a limitation in terms of, you know, how at what intervals they put it in, but they never know what the players are going to do with it. And if in one season players hang on to it for 10 votes, I mean, play them 3 episodes left in the game, another season the inverse happens, you know, they can't help. So I think their best bet is to introduce it at such a different types of advantages and
make
hope that some die gets
solved it.
Or make it expire, exactly. And then you kind of, you know, give a bit of impetus to the players to make a move. So I think it's a difficult thing for production to anticipate, because, you know, players do their own thing. But I think this ticking time bomb kind of idea, I think we're now getting into a place where, like, okay, now this is the middle ground where everybody's happy with what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want it to be mathematically possible for there to be an advantage Geddon. But, like, my theory is that show is trying to create advantage Geddons because they gave Chris Underwood an idol that made it possible at the final six for the final five. Like, that's at the point where you, like, okay, this is, like, it's not like, oh, well, how's it going to get played in the next 10 tribals? Like, it's a very small amount of time. You can kind of see how it's going to go. They clearly think the story moment was, like, best TV ever, so I think they're actively trying for it. I think they think, like, Tony going out in this way would have been, like, epic TV. And also, like, if Dekal had been put on Yara Beach with their three idols and Jeremy Safety Without Power, would they still have hidden an idol at Yara? And if Tony found it, the game would be broken. Literally no one would be able to be voted for. So I don't want the game to be broken. That's all. I don't want to go back to basics, and I don't want the game to be broken. I fall somewhere in the middle of that. Josh Green asks, while Yara was not featured a lot on this past episode, I think Sarah is playing an incredible game. What do you believe has helped Sarah connect with so many different types of people in her various seasons?
Yo. Look, Sarah is also somebody I picked early in my draft of the other season 7 players. I think Sarah is one of those people who she's fortunate enough to have, in the first time she played, burned herself in a bad way. Not, you know, just, okay, we got the numbers, you know, we're going to be all in and not taking care of her alliance and seeing how that burned her, to come back a second time to realize, okay, if I take care of these people, I'll get to the end. And at the same time, within that new mindset of I need to take care of my alliance, she's also one of the people who has proven to be good at utilizing and exploiting these advantages. So I think Sarah's playing the game perfectly in the sense of don't be a high profile player. Don't make too many big swings too soon. But at the same time, have a contingency plan for whatever scenario pops up. And I think that's what makes her such a threatening player, where I think it's difficult now to shake Sarah. You know, you won't easily pull the rug from under or shake a foundation. But I think there's a lot of people like Kim. It's never been in that position where if you go to Kim like right now and you say, okay, well, I've got two idols. This is what I'm going to do. Boom, boom. Sorry, Kim. It's your move. She might be flustered. Where Sarah, if you go to her with that argument, she'd be like, okay, well, in that case, I'm stealing your vote and we're back to square one. So I think she's been in a fortunate position being voted out once, being on a season where she has been able to come back. And I think she's very unshakable, and I think that's her strongest asset.
Yeah, that structure is, I think, is a good thing. It's good, I think, to be voted out, and you know what it's like and what it feels like, and then it's also good, obviously, to win against maybe even returnees, where it's like, that sounds pretty cutthroat. So she's had that experience. Like, Sarah, for me, I did a draft before we knew any of the winners in the cast. We just knew it was all winners, so I did it with, you know, we did six of us, drafted all the winners. And she was my first pick before I even knew who was in the cast to win the whole game. And then it kind of fell a bit when I found out about Edge of Extinction, because I started elevating bigger physical threats like Tyson, Jeremy, Nat, Wendell. Yeah. But she's back now. Like, she's my winner pick right now. I think she has such a seamless social game. People tend to love her. People from Game Changer have said that she was like their best friend. It doesn't really translate, but it must be true. And also, I was talking to my brother about how worried we are for Tony, and he was like, he must be okay because, right, he has to connect with Sarah narratively, right? Like, the edit is showing us how important Cops Are Us is. And I was like, it's because Sarah wins. Like, that's why I think that. I'm like, I've already thought about it. I've already worried about this, and I'm pretty sure Tony is going home. But Sarah is long for the game, so she's doing great. Marlon Alvarado asks, is it just recency bias, or is the move by Denise comparable to other staple big moves? He actually hit staply big moves. Great pun. Big moves that we often think of, like when Parv played the two idols in Heroes versus Villains. This is the last question. Do you think this move will go down in 10 years from now, when we look back at this, like we think about Parv's double idol play?
I will say, as it stands right now, definitely. The one thing that will potentially change that is we've heard the conversation that Jeff has had with Rob and at the premiere, where Jeff Probst has been like, guys, best season ever, trust me, it's going to be insane. It's better than Heroes vs. Villains. It's better than Fans vs. Favorite. This is going to be something you've never seen before. And when Jeff's, you know, obviously he's going to promote his own show, I get that, but, you know, was he talking about this moment? Was he talking about the final eight, final six? the final three, we don't know. So I definitely think, as it stands right now, I think, let's say Denise gets voted out tomorrow, I think her place will be cemented in history as an epic way to get rid of the queen and an epic tribal council. And I think Viridium and all those people who make survival videos are definitely going to analyze this in insane detail. So I think it's going to be a move that's going to be spoken about for years on end. So I definitely think it's going to be part of the legacy of Survivor. But we don't know what's in store. We've got such a dynamic cast. You know, there's no duds here. There's no, I don't want to name individuals. There's no people here who are, who'd rather fizzle out than explode. You know, everybody here is like, well, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out in a bang. And a lot of his names, if you think about somebody like Ben, Adam, Nick, Sarah, Tony, Wendell, even, if you corner them into a corner, they're not gonna you know, roll over and die. They're gonna come out of some kind of huge antic or move. So, you know, we've seen it's the best of the best. So I don't think we've seen the upper limit. I don't think we've reached the ceiling of what these players can deliver just yet. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine it getting better. I mentioned all the other Hall of Fame moves it reminds me of. But it's like, if you think back to Heroes Villains, there was Power's Double Idol Play. But before that, you know, Tyson voted himself out, and that's gone down in history. And then there was still the merge vote to come. So that might be a little bit like this. Like, that's still historic. Like, this will still always be historic. And if another move, and when probably another move comes along that is as big and epic, maybe multiple times a season, I don't think it'll take away from this. Like, to me, I'm still going to look back like, she voted the queen out with her own idol. It's crazy. And also just like being against these players and in an all winner season that in itself is going to be like the Survivor movie and like that iconic, like you remember it even more.
And you mentioned it earlier saying, okay, she got JT, but if somebody in the future buys an idol with whatever currency and then uses that idol to vote out the person they bought it from, thinking mm-hmm. like, yo, you just got the niche, you know. Mm-hmm. So it might become a Survivor verb.
Turned her name into a verb. That is like, that's either very bad or very good.
Well, you know, JT is a bad verb.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the niche, you got the niche, can be a good verb, you know? We'll see where Survivor goes.
No, I think if you get voted out because you sell your own idol and then get voted out with it, you should be queened. That's what it is. You just got queened. Mm. I think that sounds really good, and that's what it should be.
Okay. I can see that also. I mean, you know, the language as a whole is determined by the people who speak it, not by academics. So if people speak of the queen or Denise, then that's going to be the word that gets used.
I love the full circle moment that at the end of the podcast, we've come back to the strange language that we as super fans use. Lay contender for the hashtag for queened. We also have shacks and ladders. Which one should we go with?
I like shacks and ladders.
Okay, that's well, cool. that put that into the lexicon.
Yeah, shacks and ladders. Yeah, it's like smoke and mirrors. Like, yeah, it's all shacks and ladders. You know, it might become.
I'm going to start using it because it's no crazier than saying like pagonging. You know, it's no crazier than saying other terms that we've just adopted. And I'm just going to see if people go with it. I'm just going to start using it in my everyday life.
I'm going to start using it as well. I don't think my mom or random people is going to understand, but I hope the Survivor people pick up on what shacks and ladders mean.
Yes, join us. But Jacques, where can people find you to get your takes on the season for the rest of the time?
You can get me on Twitter. I'm Jacques B. Tweeden. I tweet mostly about Survivor. Mm-hmm. I don't think I tweet about anything else.
Who does?
Maybe ESCOM once every 6 months when they shut down my power for no reason. and
niche.
Then on Instagram. Yeah. And then on Instagram, I'm D_Lem, which is just pictures of me and Haley and our family and our dogs just running around. So it depends on, you know, what kind of social media coverage you like of my life. Those are the two big platforms. Yeah.
You had me at dogs. I've got a lot going on. Firstly, follow me at Shannon Gates. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed where you can get all of the content I'm about to describe to you. Firstly, this podcast. Jacques, I've got such a good guest for Survivor Global next week. It is not a player, actually. For the first time on Survivor Global, it is the great Leroux Buta, the executive producer of Survivor South Africa, is going to come on and recap the next episode with us. So that is it's a big get, right?
That is great. Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm just my worst careful now. I think Leroux should have been out filming now. But I think his filming plans have been cut short, so now he has to fill up with other related survivor material. Now, I think Larry is I think he's a great guest, and I think he's going to give a lot of more, you know, on production insight. I mean, I'm always speculating when I speak of these things, but he'll tell you, you know, they've got a plan for X, Y, and Z. I mean, you know, yeah. You know, he loves the show and he's got a vision. So he's a great guest to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're getting some very unique insights. And I think Survivor South Africa will be okay, hopefully. And maybe we'll get into a bit of that, or just hope and pray that it won't be postponed like all of the other survivors in the world, which is very unfortunate. Yeah. But until that happens, while we have Survivor left on our screens, I recap the 7th week of Australian Survivor with Jackie Glazier. Next week, I'm recapping the penultimate week with Liana Boris. Week 7 exits are out. Week 8 exits, I assume, are out. I assume the lockdown isn't going to affect that, hopefully. So much going on. Talking Tribal is happening. Next week is my last week on the show because I'm not doing the finale coverage. So I hope you guys have been watching that or listening to the podcast. You can subscribe at Australian Survivor Talking Tribal. Been a really fun opportunity. So I hope you guys check that out. I think that's all I got. Jock, thank you,
Shannon,
so much.
You have really, I want to say rise to the ranks. Maybe it sounds condescending, but you've really, you know, from the position where you are speaking to all these great players and these great production people, and I'm just happy for you. You know, you know, 2 years ago when I first, you know, saw you podcasting, I followed you on Twitter, and it's been a ride since. You know,
how far we've come.
How far you've come, and how far you've come.
You went on Survivor.
I did. But afterwards I decided to return to my boring domesticated life, but I mean, coming Survivor, I'm so happy for you. It's quite epic.
Thank you. Just in time for Survivor to be just like postponed en masse, but really like the rest of the world, like we're gonna get it back, and I hope that we have provided some distraction in this time for everyone. I just want to say to all our listeners, be safe, be healthy, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, be kind, because I can't believe that people tweeting the hate and putting the hate to Wendell anyway is crazy to me. But like during the pandemic, it's like, guys, we're kind of going through something
right now. Remember why you walked into the gym for the first time. Whatever your motive was for walking to the gym.
What is the gym?
Another person has a different motive for walking to the gym. So just respect their reason for going to the gym. And let's just all love a show that we love. It's as simple as that.
All the gyms are closed at the moment. Like the worst time for a gym analogy.
Well, some African gyms are not.
Okay.
You know, they just got like tons of hand sanitizer on every machine. So it's the cleanest it's ever been, but it's not on lockdown just yet.
Okay.
So
it's for the rest of us, you know. Anyway, it's a crazy world. Take care of yourself, as I've said. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Jacques, so much for being here. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you next time. Stay safe. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.